is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run!
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White!
He's in trouble. He is sacked.
Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there!
McCoy, much to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome to a Monday edition of the John Murphy Show. Chris Brown in for an under-the-weather John Murphy, along with Donald Jones, here to take you through the show today, jam-packed show today, as the Combine, at least the on-field testing portion, is wrapping up today in Indy at Lucas Oil Stadium with the DBs, some of the fastest guys in the draft pool. Running today, doing field drills right now, and you know we'll have updates on all of that. We'll also kind of recap the week that was the NFL Combine. We'll be talking to some people who were very plugged in, among them NFLDraftScout.com analyst Dane Brugler will be on the show at 2 p.m. today. We'll also get a chance to talk to one of the newest Buffalo Bills, Vontae Davis, will join us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline at 1:30. But we've got a lot to discuss, a lot of NFL news going around. This is the time when the rubber meets the road, Donald, and we'll get into all of that, whether it's free agency, whether it's franchise tags. Trade talk also came up through the course of last week and early this week, and franchise tagging is also coming up real fast because the deadline to do that is Tuesday at 4 p.m., and some teams are going to have to make some tough calls if negotiations aren't where they want them to be with some of their best players on the roster. You and I both jetted out of there before the weekend was out, Indy.
Yeah.
And you went home to Jersey. I came home here, and, you know, you're away for a few days. You got to catch up with family, right?
You got to get back. Got to get back to the family. And for me, you know, I'm gone from the family anyway, so it's always good to get back. My weekend was a pretty eventful one, so I flew back home, and first of all,
did you get back okay, like no delays or anything?
It was no delays.
That's pretty good, because India is notorious for canceling flights at the drop of a hat.
See,
which is why we drive.
Yeah, that's why.
We do the eight-hour drive.
Which I complain about, you know, every year. The eight-hour drive.
You do one half of it. You didn't have to do the other.
Right. I did the same thing last year. I flew out. But it was sunny in Indy, and I had to fly to Detroit. I figured that I would get to Indy from Indy to Detroit. But from Detroit to Jersey was the big question mark because it didn't snow in Jersey, but it was very windy. The wind gusts
were
like 60.
They had the nor'easter come through.
Right. And the wind gusts were like 60 miles an hour. So
that must have been a fun landing.
We get on the plane, and the pilot goes, yeah, so in New Jersey, you know, the wind gusts, they're coming in and out, and there's like a legal limit for us to be able to fly into.
Oh, to land.
Land the plane in. And he's like, hopefully when we get there, it's under the legal limit. And everybody's on the plane like, what? So what if it's not under the legal limit? What's going to happen? We're going to fly in circles? We're going to land somewhere else?
Well, yeah, they probably would have you circle.
Which I hate circling. When you're up there and you're ready to land and you're just flying around the airport, you're like, come on, man. Can we just get down there? But
Newark or
into
JFK?
Newark.
Oh, okay.
Into Newark. Because the flight into JFK, it just takes me too long to get out of New York City into New Jersey. But, you know, we made it. It was a very eventful landing, to say the least.
So you were wobbling a little
bit. Oh, yeah. We wobbled.
A little wing wobble?
We wobbled. Everybody clapped when we landed.
Anybody reaching for vomit bags?
Nah, not anywhere near me. Not anywhere near me. And I had the entire row to myself. I think the people who were supposed to be in my row said, forget this.
Yeah, I'm not.
I'll leave tomorrow.
You know, so it would be funny if people were allowed, based on what the captain says, to just get up and get off the plane.
I'm telling you.
Everybody sits down, and he says an announcement like the one you're talking about. Well, you know, we're kind of hoping that we'll be under the legal limit to land the plane based on the wind gusts that are going on. I mean, I could see, if you were allowed to, couldn't you see like 15 people just getting up and be like, yeah, I'm going to go tomorrow.
Yeah, can we just reschedule? You should, right? Yeah, it was crazy when he said that. Everybody looked around like, I'd rather you not tell me that.
Yeah.
You know, so we ended up still making it in on time. I had to go straight to a birthday party. It was like 11. I went straight to – I had to Uber from the airport to a birthday party. I had my bags and everything with me. So I go into – it was a surprise 30th birthday party.
Mm.
And I'm flying in straight from Indy with bags. I got a big duffel bag with all my clothes for the week and a book bag on. And then I had to do a – Saturday was a baby shower, which.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Like a couple's baby shower?
You know, there's this new thing now where guys go to baby showers.
Because I just had to go to one about a month ago.
And I'm like old school. You know, my dad and, you know, my grandfather, my uncles, they're like, man, I don't do baby showers. And yeah. I can never get out of them.
Yeah. And they have games and stuff that you got
to
play.
Right. Which I ended up having to play the games, one of the games.
What was the worst one? What was the worst one?
They had to wrap a diaper around you in toilet paper.
Wait, hold up. Hold on a second. I can't even picture what you're describing right now.
You stand up and they give you a roll of toilet paper and there was like three.
So the toilet paper is the diaper or there's a diaper that they have to stick to some part of your body?
You got to make a diaper out of toilet paper.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you got to, after you're done, you get a time limit. It was like a minute and a half. And then you got to walk down the middle of it and walk back. And whoever's diaper looked the best after you walked down and back
held up.
Wins. Yeah.
Because I'm guessing not all of them stayed up. Either.
Mine didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was eventful.
But that's just over your clothes. Nobody's stripping down.
Oh, no. Yeah, okay. Just over your clothes.
I was going to say, what kind of party is this?
So. And then the rest of the weekend, you know, I wanted to watch the Combine, which I was able to watch some of it. My son loves, you know, he's into Disney Junior. And so he wants to watch Disney Junior.
Mickey Mouse Clubhouse is
right.
What you're watching.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Don't those voices get to you after a while? Those high-pitched, squealing voices?
And it's bad. And what's really even worse is I find myself actually watching it on my own now. It's pretty bad. Like, yeah. My son will actually get up and go and start playing somewhere else, and I'm still watching it.
Like,
and then I catch myself, and I'm like, why am I watching this? He's not sitting here with me watching this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
That was my weekend.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were running around to a lot of basketball games and youth basketball games and parties and whatnot because it was my son's birthday last week. So I kind of had to make up for some lost time when I was in Indy. So we did that. Got some good time in. Watched an awful lot of college hoops this weekend because the Big Ten tournament was a week earlier than it usually is.
Because everything is in New York.
Well, yeah, and you usually have the smaller conference tournaments this past weekend, mm-hmm. You know, like the Atlantic Sun or the Sun Belt. You know, Missouri Valley Conference Tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And then this week are the bigger ones. You know, you have Big East and ACC and SEC and
usually
all of those.
Big Ten.
So Big Ten is usually this week,
mm-hmm.
But it was last week. So I didn't get a chance to watch too much Big Ten basketball this year. So I tried to catch up a little bit where I could between folding laundry and other stuff that you got to make up for lost time, man.
Yeah,
you're gone for 4 or 5 days, maybe putting the deposits.
You come back home and you're doing everything.
Oh, yeah.
Dishes, cook, laundry, everything.
The honey-do list gets awfully long when you're not around.
Now, what about because you were gone, do you have someone who comes and shovels? Does your kids actually do that?
Well, I have a plow. I have a snowblower.
Okay.
And I also have a plow service. And I also have a shoveler who's 14 years old and can handle it.
Okay.
So that's what happened.
Gotcha.
The plow service came because a lot of it, I guess, came in rapid. It piled up quick.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if the plow guy only has to come one shot, they're usually pretty prompt.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's like 2 inches and then it stops and then it's 2 inches, you know, later in the day, the dude's waiting until the end of the day. He's
right.
Not coming out twice to clear off 2 inches only to come back and clear off another 2 inches.
Right.
It's not cost effective for him, which I get, which is why I still have the snowblower.
Gotcha.
So I can take care of it myself. But, yeah, we were pretty thankful that snow came when it did because we were driving back and everything was
good.
Long gone. I mean, we were traveling back 24 hours after that thing, so we were good to go, which was good as far as timing because the last thing you want to do on an 8-hour drive
is drive through
is
the storm.
Hit that like the last 2 hours of your drive
because
you're white knuckling it and you're tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start getting bloodshot eyes and all that. But yeah, we split the drive back, and so it wasn't that bad. So we got in safe and sound, and all is right with the world. 803-0550 to join us as we're just getting underway here on the John Murphy Show on a Monday. We got a lot of combine talk. You know, Donald and I kind of have to review a lot of what we observed while we were out there this past week. And there's stuff still happening now.
Mm-hmm.
Franchise tag stuff is coming up. Are you surprised at all that the Steelers are at this point again where they're going to have to tag Le'Veon Bell? I mean, the talk is that they're just using that to buy themselves some time to get to a long-term agreement, but they've been talking about this for over a year.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they're ever going to come to terms.
Have you heard what he's asking for?
No, but I got to believe it's the moon.
Yeah. Because he feels like he's probably the key part of that offense.
Well, I think it's safe to make that argument. And logic would say, in all likelihood, he's probably going to play longer than Roethlisberger is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
It has been one of the most prolific offenses of the last 3 or 4 years
right.
in the league. I think he knows, as a running back, his window is shorter than just about any other position. So if there's anybody that's going to hold out for their money, it's going to be a running back, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
because
yeah.
this guy knows, I got to cash in now while I'm at the peak of my, you know, performance level. Because if I don't get the big money now and, you know, come 28 years old, I start declining like a lot of guys do. Not all, but most. I'm not going to get my money, and I'm just going to be like yesterday's newspaper.
That's exactly. And the running back position is a position that you can actually see the argument from both sides, which is really sad because
well,
you can see it from the team side where you're like, look, we can go and get – now, Le'Veon Bell is one of the best and arguably the best running back in the league. Some people would say he's the best running back in the league. So that's going to be his argument. He is probably – that offense is different when he's not there in that offense.
Oh, no question.
So that's going to be – his argument, the team side of things, they're going to say, well, you know, we could find another running back. Their backup, the one that went to Pitt, the one that battled through cancer and beat cancer, he played pretty well.
James
for them.
Conner, yeah.
Yeah, James Conner, he played pretty well for them. And so the teams are always going to say, well, we could find one of these running backs. We don't have to break the bank to have a good running back on our team, but you have one of the best running backs on your team. So I can see both sides. I can see why they are at a stalemate. It doesn't even shock me.
Right. And I would have to take a look. I didn't do it before the show. I didn't have time as to when Roethlisberger's contract's up. I mean, last year he's talking about retirement. Then he sees quarterbacks getting 25, 26,
yeah.
27 million a year.
Yeah.
Whoa, hold up. You know yeah. what? Maybe I could. Yeah, the arm's feeling pretty good. I might be able to play like 3-7 more years or something here. You know, so I think his intent is to keep playing, and you have to pay the quarterback. You don't have a choice there. Running backs are more easily replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Bell is a unique back. I won't deny that for a second, and he's been extraordinarily productive. It's going to be very interesting because Pittsburgh is historically a team that pays top dollar for very, very few players.
Yes.
Antonio Brown was an exception, and even then, they structured that in a way that was fiscally responsible. You know, you got Roethlisberger, who's been paid. You know, now does Bell get paid too? The interesting thing here is they're at a point in their evolution as a team under Tomlin where they don't have that super high-priced marquee defensive player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually there's some
somebody.
All-world defensive player, you know, right. whether it was Polamalu in years past, even way before that, Greg Lloyd, you know, the linebacker. You know, there is usually a high-priced defensive player. And I know Cameron Hayward's a heck of a player up front, but they don't have, like, that premier pass rusher who's going to be getting $13, $14 million a
yeah,
year.
Yeah.
They don't have a premier corner who's going to be getting $13, $14 million a year. So I think unless you feel you've got somebody on your roster that's going to be commanding that kind of money in the next year or two, you may just want to pay Bell. I'm not saying give him a five-year deal, but maybe give him a three-year deal
and, yeah.
and pay you know close to top money and give him a lot up front and see where that goes. Because I don't know what they've attempted here, but in the better part of a calendar year, nothing has happened. And maybe they just think Bell's off his rocker with what he's asking for, or maybe the Steelers are lowballing him. But and they've had issues with him too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, let's not make any mistake about that. I mean, wasn't he late to the final walkthrough before the Steelers game this year?
I didn't hear that one.
Steelers against the Jags. I read a report. Steelers lost that game to the Jaguars and went to the AFC title game, played the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
So in the divisional round, Saturday walkthrough. Before the game on Sunday, Bell doesn't show up until there's 5 minutes left in the walkthrough.
Sheesh.
Now, nothing was said by the team about that. He played, but it was discovered afterwards that in fact, was the case. And there are little things like that, which for a franchise like the Steelers, you know, they don't they don't take kindly to that, and I think that hurts you in terms of what they're willing to offer you sometimes. And it's not just a one-time incident. There have been other issues between Bell and the organization. So I think it's more than dollars and cents here. It's more of, look, we'd like to pay you that money. We really would. But how do we know we can trust you? Look at this track record here.
Once he has that money now.
You know, so I think they're a little hesitant to heavily invest. You know, that's why the Bills got so criticized, the previous regime, for the Darius contract, because they hand him a boatload of money, and then he goes downhill after that. Mm-hmm. And there had been a history of being late to meetings and, you know, not making weight or whatever the case might be, off-the-field incidents, you know, drag racing, hitting a tree, doing other stuff. I don't know if the list is quite as long for Le'Veon Bell, and certainly the production has been there in far greater with far greater consistency than Marcell Dareus when he was here. But those things count against you, and they're held against you because when you're making an investment this size, it's going to come to the forefront, and it's going to be one of the first things that the team says to you. How do we know we can trust you?
You know, and this is why when I get a chance to speak to whoever it is, college kids, high school kids, young players in the NFL, when I speak to the rookie classes that come in here, I always talk to them about things like this, you know. And it's not even just while you're in the NFL. It's also when you get out of the NFL. You might want to get a job somewhere one day, and then you might have all of these reports on you that, oh, you were late to meetings, you were late to this. So for another organization, a normal company, once you retire from the NFL, what's to say they won't look back at that and say, well, you were late to all of these NFL meetings. So why, and you're not going to be making millions of dollars here, so why would you even care about this, you know? So, yeah, all of these things will count against you while you're in the league and when you're out of the league, and guys need to understand that. For him, he's also had injuries. So you have this off-the-field stuff. You've also had these injuries. And so the team is looking at you, and they're saying, okay, before you really got paid, you were notoriously late for meetings. You've had some injuries. So what's to say once we pay you this boatload of money that you're going to all of a sudden just change and say, oh, well, I got to make sure I'm on time to meetings because they paid me this money now. No, you're going to say, all right, I got my money now. There's nothing you can do. I got my guarantees. There is nothing you can do to me. So that's why guys end up falling off the hill or going downward. And that's why the NFL structures their contracts the way they do.
And why they're not guaranteed in total. In most cases. Mm-hmm. There are some rookie contracts, top half of the first round, their entire rookie contracts guaranteed. But those contracts usually are rarely over $10 million total. So it makes it a little bit easier to stomach for NFL clubs. The other big news was dropped by Peter King, of Monday Morning Quarterback in Sports Illustrated. And the latest that he got out of the Eagles camp is they're confident as a team that Carson Wentz is going to be healthy enough to be ready for week one of the NFL season. And there was a lot of debate as to whether that was going to be the case. But I don't know what new information they've got on how his rehab is progressing, but apparently it's progressing so well that they're pretty confident they can say he's going to be ready week one. Now, does that mean he's going to be ready in training camp? I think that's another issue. One of the last times I was in here hosting the show with you, I remember we were talking about, hey, you want Nick Foles after that Super Bowl performance? And the general consensus out of Philly was, well, they're not going to move him because of the uncertainty concerning Wentz. Does this change the dynamic now at quarterback for Philadelphia? If things keep progressing on this current path with Wentz, does that make them more apt to part with Nick Foles? And the way Peter King is presenting it is, if the offer is right, they would strongly consider it. He's reporting that they've got at least one respectable trade offer for Nick Foles at this point. And then he references the Bradford trade that the Eagles actually were a part of. They got a 1 and a 4 from the Vikings for Sam Bradford. Now, that was in a super desperate situation. Teddy Bridgewater goes down, and the Vikings they're in full-blown scramble mode. So you could argue that maybe they even overpaid a little for Sam Bradford, you know, with a 1 and a 4. And certainly the return on investment doesn't look like it's panned out for them just based on Bradford's injury history more than anything else. You know, his production numbers were okay, but a 1 and a 4 was a lot to give up for a guy that's been on the sidelines an awful lot for the Vikings. So what does it take? It probably is going to take at least that, a 1 and a 4, before the Eagles will continue talking on the phone with the team, I would think. I just wonder if anybody's willing to part with that.
With the 1 and a 4?
Yeah.
For this year's draft.
For Nick Foles.
For Nick Foles. I think teams would do it. If you're a team that has a lot of draft picks.
Right. And the other thing to consider here, too, is I think a team that is concerned about not landing Kirk Cousins,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's say, you know, we're talking Arizona, mm-hmm. Denver, Jets, Vikings. Only one of those teams is going to end up with Kirk Cousins, who's looking for 3 years and $90 million. So people that are on the losing end of that, I think they may put together an offer for Foles. And I think the overwhelming sense on why Foles would prompt a team to part with those draft assets is you know what you're getting.
Right.
You know what you're getting. With all of these other guys in the draft, there are question marks. And no one's done it at the NFL level. I don't care how rock solid a prospect you think any one of these guys are. None of them have done what Nick Foles has done,
mm-hmm.
which is produce in the NFL. He had the 27 touchdown, 2 interception season that everybody talks about. He's had some other pedestrian seasons, and then he had a whale of a playoff run to the Super Bowl title. And I don't know that I've seen a backup quarterback play better than that against some top flight defenses, most notably Minnesota in the NFC title game. It makes you wonder if Minnesota doesn't get Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
Were they so enamored with Foles in the NFC title game when he beat them
that they offer
something up?
They should have been. I mean, they are the one team, and I'm sure the rest of the teams that are really need or have seen Nick Foles up close and personal, but the Vikings seen him at his best. Like, people talk about the Super Bowl game.
He torched them.
And yeah, people
I mean,
talk
that
about
game
the Super
was
Bowl.
Over
he played
halftime.
Great. But that Vikings game, he torched that defense, which was, what, the number one defense in the league?
Yeah, number one passing defense. I know that.
So, I mean.
What other proof do you need?
Right.
We're a pretty good defense. He carved us up.
They see him firsthand. So
that's straight for this guy.
If I was them, I would probably do that before I even went for Cousins. You know, just because Kirk Cousins is going to command so much money, I don't think
right.
you need to pay. Well, first of all, Nick Foles is not – he's still on the final year of his contract.
Right, he's
still
on the
contract. Talking about, we're going to pay him $7 million. Now you're giving up a first and a fourth. I get that. But if I was the Vikings, I'd definitely go all in on that one because you've seen him firsthand. The Bills, I would think, would want to get into the discussions because you have 2 first-round picks because you're sitting at 21-22. You're not sitting somewhere if you feel like
you're not in the top 10.
Right.
You're
not going to get one of these elite quarterbacks.
A little bit.
Exactly. But because you're not in the top 10, we'll give you one of our picks. We'll give you a 4. We might even slide another player in there on our team just to really sweeten the deal. And if I'm, you know, Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, I'm making that call and I'm like, look, I give you a 1st, a 4th, and I'll slide in this player if you do it right now. Let's lock this thing in right now.
Yeah. It's gonna be really interesting to see where that goes and to see if – because to a certain extent, you know, the Eagles would be rolling the dice as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, on Carson Wentz's knee and being confident that it's going to hold up. And, I mean, he's a guy that runs around now. I mean, he tucks it and runs. You know, I saw a report maybe a month ago that said he may have to wear a knee brace for mm-hmm. the rest of his career
mm-hmm.
based on the damage that it, you know, his knee sustained, even with rehab and getting back on the field. Maybe he runs around less, becomes more of a pocket guy. That's no guarantee either that you're not going to injure the knee again. But, you know, you're a championship caliber team. You've proven it by winning the Super Bowl with your backup quarterback. Do you want to keep him in the fold, or do you know after next year we're going to lose him anyway? Which is probably the case. Someone
mm-hmm.
would probably offer him starter money in free agency next year
right.
just by virtue of what he did this year in the playoffs. So better a year too early than a year too late. Deal from a position of strength rather than one of weakness. Get some kind of return
mm-hmm.
on being smart enough to have Foles in your lineup and, you know, putting him in a position to execute and succeed the way he did. So I think there is impetus for the Eagles to trade him if the right assets are coming back. I really think the prime players here, though, are going to be the teams that lose out on Kirk Cousins. What becomes the more interesting question is, are those teams so sold that they not only give up a 1 and maybe a four or some other kind of package? Or are they also willing to say, hey, we're not only going to do that, we're going to sign Foles to a long-term extension? Because I'd be inclined to kind of sit and wait on that a little bit. And if he's lighting it up, you know, the first 4 or 5 weeks of the year, okay, well, then sign him to an extension, you know, mid-October or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you're if you're giving up all those assets, though, you kind of are already committing to that guy to be your quarterback for the next several years anyway. I don't know. Do you see it any differently than
that? I'm not sure if the reports – none of us are sure if the reports are true. But I'd say this. If I'm the Eagles, I hang on to Nick Foles, at least for the beginning of the season. And if you're truly confident, and I'm sure they're confident in the way that he has looked in practice, obviously the way he looked in the playoffs, won the Super Bowl, won Super Bowl MVP, you have to be confident that if you need him in the beginning of the year to start the year for you,
yeah,
that he's going to play well enough that once Carson Wentz comes back at that point, you can still trade Nick Foles and you can still get something for him. And you can make it happen before the season is over, and now you're talking about you're not going to get anything back in return. So, for me, I keep him. And if I'm any other team, I am calling the Eagles. I mean, the Eagles really hold all of the cards right now. They because they are the ones with Nick Foles, and teams are going to call and offer so many different things, especially like you're saying, the teams that don't get Kirk Cousins, those are the teams that, especially if they're really all in on like the Denver Broncos, Arizona, these teams that have had trouble in the past drafting a quarterback.
Yeah, look at the Denver resume.
Yeah.
Not good. Not good.
They have not done well drafting quarterbacks at all.
What is the last three? Tim Tebow. High. We're talking first round guys.
Was Osweiler high?
Osweiler was a fourth round pick. But we're talking Tim Tebow, first round pick.
And Paxton Lynch.
09 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
Paxton Lynch. And there's another guy in there, too, that they drafted in round one. And I'm going to forget.
Yeah, I can't remember. But
I put it in the story
not,
I wrote on.
They have not done well. So you have to believe that John Elway is like, look, I give up on trying to draft these kids.
Well, that's the funny thing, because he was asked just that at the combine this past week. You know, aren't you worried about all the misses, you know, that the organization has had? And he says, I don't care about the misses, you know. And that's, if you think about it, that's kind of the same attitude he had as a player.
Yeah.
You know, he could throw 10 incompletions in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You get to the 2-minute drill, and all of a sudden the guy hits like 10 passes in a row, and he wins the game for you. But, yeah, he said, I don't care about the misses. I'm going to try to pull up the quote right here. But, oh, and Cutler. So you got Paxton Lynch, Tim Tebow, Jay Cutler. Cutler was a talented player,
mm-hmm.
but he flamed out and really didn't have any measure of success
right,
you know, in any of the three teams that he played for, Denver, Chicago, and the Dolphins this past year. But, yeah, here's the exact quote from Elway. Believe me, I'm not done swinging and missing. And he was laughing when he was saying this because I was standing right there. Misses don't bother me. We just have to figure out a way to get it right. This is what we are working on.
I mean, they've missed. They've missed.
Yeah.
He struck out.
They already struck out. Yeah. Three misses, you know. Only three strikes, buddy.
Right, exactly.
Not that he was the team president for all of those picks. At least I don't think so. I don't think he was team president yet when Cutler was drafted. But he was there when Tebow was drafted, I'm pretty sure.
He wasn't president, but he was already there when Cutler was drafted? Like he was working there?
I think so. I'd have to check his
career bio. Just not in what capacity. I got this tweet that says Tyrod in the first for Nick Foles.
Oh, to be a backup?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's an interesting scenario, but the problem there is probably Tyrod's contract.
True.
$10 million for a backup, it's not egregious in terms of money, but it's probably a little more than a team would like to pay, especially a championship-caliber team that's going to have to start paying people here. I mean, he's in the last year of his deal. You can
Carson
move him
Wentz
off your roster after this year. Yeah, including Carson Wentz, oh, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. There was also a report I saw that Arizona could be interested in acquiring their quarterback via trade. Their head coach, Steve Wilks, new head coach, said, you know, we are entertaining all options, including trade. So immediately everybody's ears perked up, and they said, does that mean, you know, they'd be interested potentially in Tyrod to be their starter?
Yeah.
So people are just talking left, right, and center about all of this quarterback movement. And really, I'd be surprised if anything happens before the Kirk Cousins deal is signed.
Yeah.
I really would, because I think that's the first domino.
Yeah.
And then all the other ones, it's like pickup sticks. It's like, all right, Cousins has been pulled out of the pile, mm-hmm. and now everybody's scrambling to get whatever else is left in the pile.
Right.
And I think that's when the frenzy quarterback market truly does get a little nuts. And it'll be fun to watch. There's no question about it. 803-0550 if you want to join us as we're talking NFL, free agency, franchise tags, combine, we're wrapping up. We've got a whole bunch of stuff to discuss. You're welcome to discuss it with us, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Chris Brown, Donald Jones with you here on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown in for an under-the-weather John Murphy here on Monday with Donald Jones on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're talking NFL free agency, we're talking franchise tag, and we're talking combine as the on-field testing is wrapping up out in Indy today. Donald and I out there for most of the week last week when a lot of the goings-on were happening, including the quarterback stuff. And we're asking you at 803-0550, who impressed you at the combine this week? We know it's not the end-all, be-all, Donald. Obviously, the tape, the game tape, the body of work, the production mm-hmm. over the course of one's career is what counts the most, at least in the eyes of the scouts. But it's hard not to be caught up when somebody really blows the doors off, either at the microphone or at the bench or out on the field running or fluidity of movement or how a quarterback threw or how a receiver ran, whatever it is. Sometimes you come away going, wow, that guy's better than I thought he was when it came to just pure athleticism. Who made, you know, your list, so to speak?
And I want to say this first. We're talking about combine numbers here. We're not talking about who I think the Bills should draft based on film or any of that stuff.
Okay, the Donald Jones qualifier.
That's right. You got to qualify this thing because people would say, oh, man, that dude, he had great numbers, but he sucks. We're just talking about combine numbers, who impressed. So the receiver position for me, I got to start with DJ Chark, the kid out of LSU. Number one, receivers from LSU, I mean, you go down the list of names, and those guys have been good in this league. And so there's a history of that. Just drafting those guys and how they develop into NFL receivers. But you look at his numbers in a 4.34, so you at least you know the kid can run. 16 on the bench, which, you know, doesn't really matter. He's strong enough. 40-inch vertical, like that. 129 on the broad jump. They don't have the rest of his numbers up here, but I think he was a kid that really impressed a lot of people at the combine.
Well, he is a guy that's been ascending since the Senior Bowl, and mm-hmm. I had a chance to talk to him at the Senior Bowl, and good kid. He actually inherited the punt return job from Tre'Davious White at LSU after mm-hmm. Tre'Davious obviously went on and came to Buffalo, and couldn't say enough nice things about Tre'Davious and what a good mentor he was, even at the punt return position. And Chark's, he started the week off slow on Tuesday, but then Wednesday and Thursday, he just kept putting better and better days together, and then he played really well in the game on mm-hmm. Saturday. And I think he perked up, you know, some ears a little bit to kind of keep their ear to the ground a little bit more on what this kid was going to do. And now to see him perform the way he did, you know, in the combine testing, I think he helped himself a lot this week. You know, running the 4.34, which was among the fastest times among the receivers. I mean, he stamped himself as a true field stretcher. And I got to tell you, there aren't a ton of them in this year's draft class.
No.
There's a lot more possession guys, a lot more big, tall, back shoulder, mm-hmm. fade stop guys in this draft class. And so in a draft where Chark had an opportunity to stand out, he has thus far. And so I think he's really helped his stock a great deal. I mean, I think he's a lock now to go day two.
Right.
And, you know, I think he can be, you know, depending on how, and I'm not going to pretend to know this, just his football IQ, his football acumen and play retention and, you know, execution, all of that stuff. If he can come along there, you know, I think sooner rather than later, he can be a good number two for an NFL team. You know, as a rookie, I don't think you want to put him in a number one role. He's not ready for that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But by midseason of his rookie year, if he continues to build the momentum he has thus far, you know, I think he could be a viable number two somewhere in the league because he's got all the measurables, both in terms of height, weight, and speed. You know, I didn't get a chance to watch enough LSU games to know, you know, is this guy a gamer? Is, you know, he a rip your heart out competitor?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know all of that stuff. You know, you can read what you read, but I'd prefer to watch. And, you know, maybe when I get a chance, I'll watch a couple of their games. But he certainly has done a lot to help his cause and his stock, you know, heading into April now. Now, because now it's just the pro day. And if I'm him, I'm not running.
I'm not running the 40.
Yet. I'm not running. 4.34, I can live with that.
Yeah. I mean, he probably doesn't need to do anything else.
Just run.
Olympic.
Yeah, run routes.
Just run routes and catch the ball well, and he'll be a day two
right.
prospect.
I don't think anybody overlooked Shaquem Griffin after what he did
right.
you know, through the course of the week. First he puts the prosthetic on his left hand, on his left arm, and you know, wraps out 20 bench press reps. The thing that impresses me with that, just watching him do it, was that's a lot of weight you've got to
balance
between your good hand and a prosthetic hand. And so you're basically just balancing the whole left side of the bar
mm-hmm.
on a prosthetic that's attached to your forearm. For those that don't know, Shaquem Griffin does not have a left hand. It had mm-hmm. to be amputated at age 4 due to a congenital defect. But, I mean, he's just doing it like anybody normally would.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just impressed with the balance, maybe more than anything else. And then he goes out and runs a 4.38. It's like, holy cow.
Yeah.
At 2.25, that was impressive. I mean, that was faster than Saquon Barkley, who had everybody oohing and on. The thing about Barkley was nobody expected anything different. I think everybody expected Barkley to kill the combine testing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody knew what Shaquem Griffin was going to be able to do, but the time he ran, I mean, holy cow, that was something special. Because I will say this: he was another guy that was at the Senior Bowl. He did not look that fast, you know, in team work.
Yeah.
You know, 11-on-11, even in 1-on-1s.
Right.
You know, and I know running straight line speed is different than dropping and covering and lateral movement and all that. But, I mean, man, straight line speed, you put that kid on special teams as a rookie, he's going to go down and make you some plays.
And here's the thing. People would say, well, yeah, it's straight line speed. He ran a 40, probably learned how to run the 40 and all of that stuff. Let me tell you something. 4.4 is fast. Now, if he ran a 4.5, you could look at film and say, oh, he doesn't. Low 4.5, you could say he doesn't play at low 4.5 speed. You run 4.38, that is fast. That is, you're running with some of the fastest guys in the NFL. I don't care if it's 40. I don't care if it's on the football field. You can run with some dudes. You can't teach that type of speed. You can teach a guy, and if he's a 4.5 guy, you can teach him and maybe get him to a 4.49 or something like
right.
that. You can't teach 4.38 speed. That is hard to do. That is real speed. So for me, it started at the Senior Bowl, like you said. He didn't look that fast on tape, but I think he impressed enough people at the Senior Bowl making plays that it was like, man, this kid is because if you remember, I'm sure you remember, he wasn't invited to the combine
until after the Senior Bowl was over.
Right.
So here's a late invite, and he runs a 4.38. It's like, wow.
And so once he got the late invite, it's like, all right, everybody's going to watch. And I'm sure everybody wanted to watch anyway just to see what numbers he put up. And first he started off with the bench, and I'm sure he's used to having that prosthetic. It's something that was probably developed for him to be able to bench throughout
right.
college and things like that. So he's probably used to it. But then for him to run the 40 at 4.38, that right there was like, whoa. And then when they get into the drills, and they were just showing some of the drills for the people on the MSG side, you get into the drills and he's actually catching the ball with one hand.
Right.
And it's like, wow, all right.
And you know what, to me, that was maybe the number one thing that I think he had to show at the combine.
Yes.
Yeah, the speed is great. You mm-hmm. probably surprised some people with the time you ran. But I think the biggest question marks from talent evaluators are going to be, how much does not having that left hand
right.
inhibit you in comparison to other players? And to see him catch a ball that came to the left side of his body.
Yes, to that hand.
He goes into a drop during field testing, and our viewers on MSG got a chance to see that. He's dropping, and the guy throws it out to his left side, which is the, which is his arm that does not have the hand, and he kind of cradles it between the crook of his left elbow and with his right hand and catches it, you know, for what equates to an interception, and running the other way with it. I mean, I think he just proved I've adjusted.
Yeah.
I know how to make the proper adjustment and still make plays for a team. And that's that was the biggest statement.
Right.
I think his whole workout made, catching that ball, you know, basically with an arm that did not have a hand. I mean, that's just, holy cow. It's like he can still be a productive player for you. He can make turn, you know, get turnovers, whatever.
Yeah.
Hard not to be impressed by what he was able to do.
I mean, I've known guys throughout my years that have had something like this and have been able to actually play through it. And I watched his story, and he talked about, you know, this is something I've been dealing with since I was 4 years old. So I've learned throughout my life how to deal with this. And playing football, it was hard for him because his brother didn't have the same condition. His brother has both of his hands. His brother, for those of you who don't know, his brother plays in the NFL already for the Seahawks. And his brother was getting recruited. And he wasn't getting recruited because of that hand. And so, you know, his brother was almost like, look, if you want me, you got to get my brother as well. And so it was kind of a package deal. And then he goes and really just proves that, look, I can play too. Just because I have this condition doesn't mean that I can't play this sport. And so I'm happy for him. I think it's hard to root against him. Where can you see him being drafted, though?
I thought he was going to be a late day three pick because of, well, he doesn't want to call it a disability, but not having a left hand I thought was going to push him to day three. You wonder. You know, does he – I think he's early day three now, maybe even late day two.
Like four?
You know, and, you know, end of the third round, you know, because day three is round four through seven.
Yeah.
I think he could be in the late day two conversation, you know. And, I mean, I don't know if you saw the press conference at the Senior Bowl. I mean, the kid's just dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a million-dollar smile, comes across really well, you know, in that public setting. I mean, just – uniquely confident in his abilities. I mean, they're all confident at this level.
Yeah.
You have to be if you're going to make it. But I think what he's been able to overcome and still perform at that level was nothing short of impressive, even if you went in knowing, you know, what he's been up against through the course of his career. We've got somebody tweeting us saying, Daron Payne and Leighton Vander Esch are my draft crushes for the Bills. Now, Vander Esch, the thing with him was he was kind of a relative unknown, came out of a small high school in Idaho, played at Boise State. Only a one-year starter, though, and that's the hang-up that some people have, kind of a one-year wonder type. They'd prefer to see more of a body of work. And I remember Mike Mayock saying in his national conference call last week that he expected him to run in the mid-4.6s, and he did that. He ran 4.65. 20 reps on the bench, 39.5 vertical, 10.4 on the broad jump, 6.88 for a three cone. That's pretty good, right? 6.88 is a good figure. And then 4.15 on the short shuttle. And I think the biggest thing that Vander Esch had to show as a 6'3" linebacker was that he has that lateral agility because he's described as a sideline-to-sideline player. But now he's got the numbers, I think, to back that up. And so I think he helped himself with those numbers maybe more than anything else, even more than his straight line speed, his lateral and change of direction speed, the numbers he was able to put up there I think were important, plus the explosion, you know, 39.5 vert, 10.4 broad. I mean, that's pretty good for a 240-pound linebacker.
You know, I had a chance to speak to Greg Cosell off air because he was doing his rounds throughout Radio Row.
You guys had him on the show last week.
Yeah, we had him on the show, but he was doing his rounds, and, you know, between – every set that he or every show that he was going to, we had a chance to sit down and I asked him, you know, who are some guys that you might be looking at that everybody's not talking about? And he was the first person that he said.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a linebacker out of Boise State. Not many people will know about him, but this kid can play. He said he can go sideline to sideline. He's big, tall, and he said, I want to see if he can move laterally, though. And he's shown with these numbers that I think he can do that.
And that is a key prerequisite for a lot of defenses in the NFL, but Coach McDermott's defense in particular, You need guys at that second level who can run and hit and also run and cover.
Right.
And to be able to do that, I think, is huge. And, you know, Leighton Vander Esch is going to look like an attractive addition for just about anybody in the NFL that has a defense that relies on guys at the second level being able to cover ground, close up gaps fast, you know, change direction, cover, and all that. We've got to step aside. John and Webster, hang tight. We'll get to you on the other side as we discuss NFL Combine and who left you impressed with on-field testing. There were a couple of quarterbacks who had some personality traits to iron out with NFL clubs. We'll talk about those guys on the other side as well. Here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown in for an under-the-weather John Murphy here on the John Murphy Show with Donald Jones on a Monday as we're kind of looking back at the NFL Combine and all that went down in Indy over the course of the last 5 to 7 days, and they're wrapping up on-field drills right now.
Right.
And we'll have some funny video next hour for our MSG viewers, and we'll be describing it for our listeners as well on WGR. But that'll be next hour. That's a little tease for you because something funny happened today with some of the on-field testing, as not everything runs perfectly. But let's go to the phones. And as promised, we've got John in Webster to lead us off with who impressed him at the Combine. And, John, thanks for joining us. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, thanks, guys. You got me?
Yeah, we got you.
Awesome. I just wanted to talk about, since we're talking about linebackers, the interview with Roquan Smith, if, you know, character is, you know, the kind of guy that McDermott looks for. I mean, he nailed it in his presence, just the way the guy spoke. What do you guys think? If we don't end up jumping up, does a guy like that fall to us at 21?
No.
No.
Who were?
No.
He doesn't make it.
I don't think he makes it past the top 10, to be honest with you. I think at the Raiders got the 10th pick, right, because the 49ers got the 9th on that coin toss.
Yeah, that's right. Raiders are 10, Niners are 9.
I think he wouldn't get past the Raiders sitting there at number 10. His style of play, and you talked about his interview, and, yeah, he's a stand-up guy. His style of play on the field, it just fits in out there in the Bay Area in Oakland. Well, it won't be in the Bay Area for much longer, but I just don't see him getting out the top 10. That kid is – you talk about somebody who goes sideline to sideline.
Well, yeah.
He flies.
He's the future at the linebacker position in the NFL. A lot of people compare him to Falcons linebacker Deion Jones, who came out of LSU and, you know, is the new soup du jour, if you will, at linebacker, the undersized guy who can run and hit and can cover tight ends, even some slot receivers, can certainly cover running backs in most cases, although Deion Jones couldn't cover LeSean this year. Some are saying that Roquan Smith runs even better than Deion Jones. So, to me, that's pretty darn impressive when you're saying that, because Deion Jones can run. So, I can't remember what Smith ran. We'll have to look it up at the Combine this week. But I thought he did fine. There was no surprises there with his workout, so I imagine he ran pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got to step aside one more time, as we've got the top of the hour coming, but we'll be talking about some of the personality questions that some of the quarterbacks at the Combine had to answer.
4-5-1.
4-5-1 for Roquan Smith. That's pretty good. At 227 or something.
Yeah. Yep.
Pretty darn good. And we have Tom in Buffalo waiting on the line. We'll get to you in the next segment as well. It's the John Murphy Show. We're talking Combine here. Chris Brown, Donald Jones with you. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Your sports update from One Bills Drive. On-field testing finishing up today at the NFL Combine. Defensive backs are the last position group being run through both testing and position drills at Lucas Oil Stadium, among the faster 40 times today. We're turned in by LSU's Dante Jackson and Ohio State's Denzel Ward. Both corners ran 4.32 40 times. In NFL news, Pittsburgh Steelers will reportedly use the franchise tag on running back Le'Veon Bell. The two sides were trying to come to terms on a multi-year contract, but that is not going to happen prior to Tuesday's deadline to make use of the tag. It's expected the two sides will take another stab at negotiating a long-term deal this spring. One premium free agent-to-be who appears headed to the open market is Chicago Bears corner Kyle Fuller. The Bears are not interested in putting the franchise tag on their best defensive back. The Bears hope to make a long-term offer, but Fuller said he wants to test the market first. Speaking of the Bears, they, along with the Baltimore Ravens, are two teams interested in working out a trade for Dolphins wide receiver Jarvis Landry. The Dolphins gave Landry and his agent permission to seek a trade over the weekend. Miami put the non-exclusive tag on Landry a couple of weeks ago. And the Sabres are back in action tonight. They host the Toronto Maple Leafs. Faceoff is set for 7:30. That is your sports update from One Bills Drive. Chris Brown, Donald Jones with you here on the John Murphy Show as we are putting a bow on the combine today. We're also talking NFL free agency with some of the aforementioned names in the news. And, you know, we've also got this Nick Foles news that Philadelphia might be more willing to listen to trade offers than they were initially, with good news on Carson Wentz's rehab and them being confident that he'll be ready for week one of the 2018 season. So, you know, things to chew on, things to talk about. I do know that we want to get into some of the quarterbacks who had maybe even more than production or mechanics or physical ability questions, had questions about their personality and how it might play in an NFL locker room, depending on one team or another. And we'll get into that in a minute. But as promised, we go back to the phones at 803-0550, where we're asking you who left you impressed from the NFL Combine, who performed well, either behind the mic or on the field. We go to Tom in Buffalo. So, Tom, what do you have for us here? You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, guys. I didn't get to watch a lot of the Combine because I only get to watch it part-time on certain TVs around the house, and I get kicked off them.
Sheesh.
So I enjoy watching it. I'm impressed with Barkley. If either Barkley or Rudolph, if we can get one of those quarterbacks, but I would rather trade for Nick Foles. And if we trade for Nick Foles, I'm willing to give up a late third rounder, but I want a fourth or a fifth rounder back for Nick Foles.
Yeah, you're dreaming, buddy. They're already saying it's going to probably take a one and a four, Tom, just to get Foles.
Yeah, I want something back, though, because Nick Foles only had 1 year.
1 year left on his deal, yeah.
1 year left on his deal, and how many times did he go to the playoffs? Hey, Tyrod made the playoffs this year. Granted, he lost, but, I mean, Nick Foles only went to the playoffs once, correct?
Yeah, but Nick Foles has had at least a couple of good seasons in the NFL. When he went out to L.A., or St. Louis / L.A., he didn't really have good seasons there, but I don't know. That's the whole Jeff Fisher quarterback killer thing out there with the Rams. But he's had a couple of good seasons in this league, and I think that's why teams would jump on a Nick Foles, because it's not like he hasn't had good seasons in the NFL already. A guy like Case Keenum, you could say, well, you really only had one good year. The rest of this thing, you've truly been a journeyman.
And now Pro Football Talk has just come out with a report specifying what the respectable trade offer was that Peter King mentioned. Peter King only referenced a first and a fourth because that's what was parted with for Sam Bradford by the Vikings, who were in a desperate situation. The situation not as desperate right now. So the respectable offer that the Eagles received for Nick Foles was a two, which is a lot less than I thought. Now, again, this is an initial offer. You're not going to give up the farm the first phone call you make.
Right.
This is a starting point, presumably, more than anything else. But it's interesting to see that it's a two to start. I don't think a three is getting it done, as Tom indicated, and we thank you for the call, Tom. I understand he wants to get some draft capital back. I don't think that's happening either. You've got a team willing to give you the Super Bowl MVP at quarterback, who went on a tear through the whole postseason. I think they're going to tell you better be happy with Nick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't think a two gets it done either in the end. I think Philly's going to try to squeeze somebody for a one at the very least. I think the reason the two was offered is because San Francisco got Garoppolo for a two, and that guy's 5 years younger than Nick Foles, who's going to be 30 by the start of the 2018 season. So I get the second-round offer, and it's probably respectable enough that at least it has Philadelphia listening. I just don't know if it's enough to get it done. And, of course, the argument on the other side is he's 29 years old. The Niners gave up Garoppolo, or the Niners got Garoppolo for just a two. So why can't we get a quarterback who's 4 years older for a second-round pick? Well, Garoppolo also just didn't win the Super Bowl.
Right, and that says a lot. Not even did he just win the Super Bowl. He won Super Bowl MVP, and he tore up some of the best defenses in the league. It wasn't like their run game just went off, and the defense played great and carried that team through the entire thing. No, Nick Foles made some great, great plays that everybody who watched it saw. And so he has a history of at least being a decent quarterback in this league.
Right, and I think the Eagles are smart enough to know we're dealing from a position of strength here. We don't have to give anything up right now. He's under contract. It's not like he's going to be a free agent. So if you're the Eagles, you're inclined to wait here because once you have three teams that didn't get Kirk Cousins, you're going to get a lot better than a second-round pick,
right?
I think. I think it'll be at least a one. Before
I think
it's
going to be a one. I can't really see them just going for a two. I think you're going to have a couple of teams that offer a one. You might have something like a fourth in there or a fifth. And you might end up seeing a player in the trade as well. You know, just because there are a few different teams that want to get Kirk Cousins, only one of them is going to get Kirk Cousins. So what do the rest of them do? Well, Nick Foles is probably the next best thing, at least right now, in terms of quarterbacks that you could say would be available.
I take him over A.J. McCarron.
Yeah.
You know, I take him over Teddy Bridgewater.
Sam Bradford.
Yeah.
The rest of them, you know. So teams are going to say, all right, especially if, let's just say, the Denver Broncos don't get a Kirk Cousins. Well, the Denver Broncos, I believe, is a team that is seeing their window close. And so they want to win right now while they still have a couple of good pieces on that team. And so, yeah, we need to get this quarterback in here right now while we still have these guys playing at their prime. So I could see a one, another draft pick, maybe even a player thrown into this trade. It's not going to be a two. It's going to be a one and something else.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us as we ask you who impressed you the most at the Combine, either with their performance behind the microphone or maybe on-field testing or even somewhere else. We go back to the phones, and we go to Matt in Rochester. Matt, you're on the John Murphy Show.
Yeah, so Combine. I was most impressed with Lamar Jackson and not running the 40-yard dash. To me, it sends a message that, hey, I'm a quarterback. I'm going to be a quarterback. I'm good enough to play quarterback in the NFL, which I think he is, by the way. I think he's going to have a chip on his shoulder for years to come. And I think if he lands in the right system with some weapons around him, he's going to be something like Vic, even Tyrod. A lot of fans around the NFL are really confused why Buffalo wants to get rid of Tyrod just because what he can do on third down and getting first downs. Anyways, that's what I think.
All right. Well, we thank you for the call. That's an interesting take on it, though. He was most impressed with what Lamar Jackson did not do, which was not run the 40. Because with all that he's probably heard leading up to the combine, he's probably like, shoot, well, apparently everybody knows I can run really well because some people are trying to talk about me as a receiver. Although he claimed in his interview out there at the combine that no team asked him if he would be interested in playing receiver or told him they would request that he run receiver drills. So, you know, he said, and even if they did, he said he probably would have declined. He was going to, I'm a quarterback. That's all I am. I've done a pretty good job of playing quarterback. As you know, when I was on the air with you and Murph last week, I mean, the guy played quarterback at a Heisman Trophy winning level. I know, you know, rushing yards were a big part of his all-purpose yardage. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, the guy also made some plays with his arm, too. I mean, let's not kid ourselves here. The accuracy thing has been the big bone of contention with him. He did improve it, I felt, last year from where it had been before. But he's He's barely there at 60%.
Do you – and that's something that hurts, number one. And people talk about Josh Allen being, what, 57, 58%?
Well, Josh 56.
Allen, 56, okay.
Josh Allen's – that's really bad.
But I think –
as I see it.
They look at him with the size, you know, and say, well, we can help to develop him into – or I guess get his accuracy better. Even though I've talked to some people that say, I don't know if you can really improve upon accuracy.
His feet are a mess. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on quarterback mechanics, but just watching him at the Senior Bowl, his feet were all over the place. They weren't underneath him.
Yeah.
You know, he's stepping out of the bucket, you know, like they do in baseball. They tell you don't step out of the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And he's stepping out of the bucket and doing all that kind of stuff. And I just think he was very inconsistent with his feet. And that's why. So, as I said, just because I wanted to pull the numbers up in front of me, just in an effort to be accurate, no pun intended here, you know, 54% passer as a freshman at Louisville.
Lamar Jackson.
56, Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. And then this past year, 59%. And that was with the most pass attempts in a season of his career, 430 in his last season at Louisville. So, you know, he's on the right track. But his career completion percentage is 57. I mean, it's only one percentage point higher than Josh Allen.
Yeah.
That gives me pause because the track record for quarterbacks who were under 60% in college at the NFL level are not good. Yeah. I don't know if there is one that became a full-time year-over-year starter in this league.
I think – when you look at that, the stats that you just laid out there and just his style of play, it's going to give a lot of teams pause. It is. And people say, well, you're crazy. He's a crazy athlete. You got to get him the ball, get the ball in his hands. I understand that. But at this level, you hear GMs, you hear different people consistently say, not that they want a quarterback to win from within the pocket, but the best ones typically do, for the most part, win from within the pocket. Every now and then, if a play breaks down, they can get outside, like an Aaron Rodgers, like a Carson Wentz. But you cannot solely rely on your legs. And so because of that, teams are going to pass on Lamar Jackson.
And I now have found somebody who's played in the NFL as a year-over-year starter. It's Tyrod Taylor. Because Tyrod, his first year, 53.7% completion. Second year, 57%. Third year, 56%. As a senior, much like Lamar Jackson, 59%. Jackson was a junior. He only played 3 years. But career completion percentage in college for Tyrod, 57%. Now, his completion percentage has improved at the NFL level. He's a 62% passer in his career. Still in all, where are we on the production scale?
Right.
This is an offense that hasn't thrown a lot over the past 3 years, so that would be something that you would defend Tyrod with. You know, they haven't even thrown it a whole lot. Well, then somebody else would say, well, if you're not even throwing it that much and he's only completing 62%, what's to say if you throw it twice as much, he's going to complete any more?
Right.
It might go down with a bigger sample size, not up. So, you know, every case is different. I'm not going to for a second say, based on what Tyrod did in college, you should expect the same thing from Lamar Jackson. But NFL scouts, talent evaluators, they make these kinds of comps all the time. It's just like the real estate market. It's like you're buying a house. Well, what did the house down the street in this neighborhood go for with the same square footage? You know, what are the updates? Do they have a new roof on that place? What do we got here? They make these comps in scouting and talent evaluating all the time at the NFL level. And you've got to believe that they're doing that. They probably pull up a database. How many guys that are in the NFL right now had a 57% career completion percentage in college. And Tyrod's name's going to come up, and somebody else, and somebody else, and somebody else, and they're going to say, okay, well, what has this guy done in the league? Okay, well, he's improved his completion percentage somewhat. You know, where did they finish in passing? How did they do in scoring? This, that, and the other. And, you know, people make judgments sometimes. It's not the end-all, be-all, but it's certainly a box that a lot of NFL talent evaluators check off.
Does it, in your opinion, hurt him if he says, I'm only a quarterback. I'm not a receiver. I'm only a quarterback. Do you think that hurts him and teams will say, well, all right, fine?
I don't think it does. Does that mean that two or three teams that only saw him as a receiver cross him off their board? Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's still – I think the vast majority of the league is looking at him as a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I have to believe that. I mean, he played at a Heisman Trophy winning level, and I know the college game is different from the pro game, although they're getting closer. You know, the gap isn't as wide as it was even 3-4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're the vast majority of teams, in based on what I was hearing at the Combine last week, the vast majority of teams see him as a quarterback, which really begs the question, where did all that traction come from?
Yeah.
Because it came from an NFL network source.
Mm-hmm.
And usually those people are plugged in just by virtue of the relationship of the network with the league and with
right,
teams.
Right.
And so that's where the initial report came from, that teams were going to ask him to do receiver drills in addition to quarterback drills. And then he, of course, dismissed it, refuted it, said, I haven't been talked about playing receiver at all this week from any team, let alone the people that run the combine. So I think if I had to guess, I would say it's probably upwards of 25 teams see him as a quarterback. And so I do think he'll get drafted, probably late round one at the latest, early round two. I mean, him and Mason Rudolph are kind of in that same area. I would put Jackson ahead of Rudolph just by virtue of the entire package. I think he offers you more.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so he's an interesting case. He's a very interesting case because I think he's been put in a certain box unfairly based on his athleticism, and I think he can be more than that. I'm just not convinced that he's going to be – I'm not convinced he's going to make that jump with his accuracy.
Yeah,
I feel a little bit better about him than I do about Josh Allen.
Because that is his – I mean
– Josh Allen really turned me off with his week at the Senior Bowl. It was just – I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, just saying new receiver, but he's throwing on air, and he's just missing people.
Yeah.
And I know he threw well at the combine. His feet did look more consistent to me. So – if you're in the Josh Allen camp, you know, you're if you want to bang the table for Josh
he's
Allen,
better.
That's what you're saying. That's what you're saying because his feet were more consistent. Oh, look, he can improve. Mm-hmm. We can teach him. Let's get him. Let's get him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think there will be some of that. There will be some of that with Josh Allen because talent evaluators, even NFL GMs, they just get so enamored
with size.
With the size. The arm strength. Mm-hmm. I mean, he threw a 66-yarder
in the
combine workout on the money.
That's all they talked about.
And that, well, right. But the problem was, for me anyway, was at the Senior Bowl, he had two or three throws like that in the practices that I watched also. But it was two or three out of 65 throws.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to me, I just, give me the accuracy and the consistency.
And that's what even Mike Mayock said. At the on air at the combine, he was like, you know, you'll see some good throws from Josh Allen, but every six or seven throw, you're just like, what was that? And you can't have that in this league because every play counts too much. It just does. It's too much money on the line. It's just too much up here at this level for you to be that inconsistent. Where every fifth, sixth, seventh throw, you throw it somewhere where people go, what? I mean, what was that? And so, yeah, he does need to get more consistent. So you have to ask yourself, if you're a team who's drafting him, are you drafting him saying that you want him to come in and start right now? I don't think so. And that's why I know he'll probably end up getting drafted in the top 15. But I think he should be somewhere in the back half of the first round where a team does have a quarterback already and can help to develop him into a better passer.
I mean, here's the thing. With Josh Allen, for me, it's hard. And again, I know sometimes the comparisons aren't fair, but this big arm and what he's able to do with it is reminding me of one guy in particular who had the same kind of size and pretty similar arm strength.
Who, Jamarcus Russell?
And did go in the first round very recently. Paxton Lynch.
Oh, yeah.
They were talking about Paxton. Oh, his arm is unbelievable. You know, he can throw it for days and this and that. And he's so tall and he's going to mature and only get better and this and that. And, you know, he can't get on the field in mm-hmm. Denver where the competition isn't exactly daunting.
Yeah.
You know, a sixth-round pick in Trevor Siemian mm-hmm. played in more games than him. And so I try not to get blinded by the big physical talent. I mean, I think there are certainly cases that you can point to where that big physical talent. John Elway is an example.
Right.
I mean, that guy could throw it through a wall 50 yards down the field.
Mm-hmm. Ben Roethlisberger.
But he also had a lot of the numbers to go along with it, the consistency. And then, you know, the bigger the game got, the better he played. And I don't know that Josh Allen doesn't have any of those things. He just has his physical ability to hang his hat on, which is impressive.
Yeah.
But in the NFL today, I remember an old coach once told me, the NFL is about first downs, not touchdowns. Keep the team moving, extend possessions, drive the field, and win in the red zone. And, you know, because in college, we see those big plays all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, 50, 60-yard touchdowns, either because, A, they've got better athletes, or, B, you know, players are more open because the windows are bigger
right.
and the quarterbacks can hit them.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL, the windows are so small, you know, if you can get down the field in 8 and 12-yard chunks because your quarterback's consistent enough to put on the money every single time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of NFL coaches that would take that.
You know, even when you look at his throws from the combine, and Mike Mayock said this as well, which really made me pay attention to it, he was late on a lot of his throws at the combine. Now, I know you don't know these guys. I understand that. You don't know these guys. The timing, rhythm, all of that stuff is off. But his throws at the combine are similar to his throws when you watch him on film. He's late, and he's waiting for those guys to fully be out of their break, and then he throws it probably because he has that big arm, and he feels like, I can zing this thing in there. And so when you watch him, if you get a chance to go back and watch some video of him from the combine, he's throwing curl routes, and these guys are 3 yards out of the curl route mm-hmm. from out of the top of that break, and the ball is coming out, where it's supposed to be coming out when they're going into their break. As soon as they turn around, that ball is supposed to be on you, because if you wait for a guy to be two or three steps out of a break,
you're getting
the
hit.
You're getting hit, or the DB is breaking right with him. And he's breaking usually faster than the receiver, because the receiver can't feel him coming that fast. And so you can't wait to be late. And I think that's a product of him having that big arm. It's something that he's going to have to improve upon. I think he's a project. And so I think he needs to be in a team that has a quarterback already that he can truly learn from.
Which is crazy when you think that everybody's projecting him to go in the top half of round one.
Mm-hmm.
You're really banking on that ceiling if you're taking him that high.
Yeah.
You're really and moreover, you're banking on the teaching and development ability of your quarterback coach
right.
and your offensive coordinator.
Right.
You better have all-world teachers. And then you take it a step further with this current CBA. It doesn't afford your quarterback coach
no.
to spend the extra time necessary to develop the backup.
Right.
You're too busy getting the starter ready to play on Sunday. So now he's getting less reps in what people are envisioning to be a developmental situation for him. And I'm not saying every team's looking at him mm-hmm. like that, but I would imagine there are a fair number of teams that see him as you see him and see him as I see him, as a developmental project. But with the way the NFL's work rules are designed, I don't know how you can effectively develop him in the way you want for your team and your offense once you get past training camp.
Yeah.
You know?
I think if you're drafting him in the top 15, which I think is where he's going to end up going, if you're taking him in the top 15, I just don't think that's the smartest thing, because obviously you're in the top 15 drafting for a reason. You need a lot more things than just a quarterback. Now, some teams, maybe you could say, all we need is a quarterback. For the most part, yeah, you need more things than a quarterback. So for you to draft a kid that's not ready to play yet, it just doesn't make sense for me. I think he should go somewhere back, Pittsburgh, New England, one of those teams where he can sit behind this guy and learn for a couple of years, where that team can say to themselves, we have a playoff team really every year, and we're developing the rest of our players. We need to draft the quarterback as the heir apparent to the guy that we have right now. And we can see this kid, his physical tools, and we can develop that. But if you're talking about top 15, we need a lot of pieces. We can't afford to waste this pick on this kid that's not going to play for a couple of years.
No, that's totally valid, which is why I wonder who's going to take that approach.
Yeah.
I think somebody will.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just having a hard time figuring out who's going to do that. I have to take a deeper look at that.
Maybe Indy, not knowing what's going on with Andrew Luck.
Oh, and three? Oh, woof.
I mean, people are talking about him top
five. They need a pass rusher. I think they're either
getting, from NC State.
They're either trying to get the top pass rusher at three. If Barkley's there, which I don't think he will be, but if he's there, I think they would take him. And then after that, I think they're taking phone calls. Yeah. I think they could be taking phone calls. There's a lot of interesting dynamics that will be at play, and this is going to be one of the more interesting.
You think Barkley would be there at three?
I'm not saying – no, I don't think he will be. I just said I don't think he will be. If for some reason he falls.
I think he's going.
I think he'd be. But, yeah,
I would be shocked if he
They're talking about him going one to the Browns now.
Yeah.
Him at one and then Mayfield at four, both to the Browns. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
That would be something else. We got to take a break here, but we'll be back with more on the other side. Who will we be back with on the other side? Buffalo's newest cornerback, Vontae Davis, will join us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline to talk about the upcoming 2018 season and why Buffalo was seen as a fit for him. We'll talk to him about all of that on the other side here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown in for an under-the-weather John Murphy here on this Monday, along with Donald Jones, as we're talking NFL Combine, NFL free agency, among other things. There's some trade talk out there as well, franchise tags and the like. But there is one guy that doesn't have to worry about anything regarding free agency because he is already signed, sealed, and delivered, signing with the Bills last week since he was already a free agent. One Vontae Davis, who joins us now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Vontae, it's Chris and Donald with you. First, congratulations. How you doing?
I'm great, man. How you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're doing great. Maybe just start for us with this whirlwind tour that we read about. I mean, it was very clear that you and your agent wanted to survey the entire landscape of what you would have in terms of options as a free agent. So maybe just walk us through the whole process with, you know, the visits and how you came to land on Buffalo.
Yeah, you said it best, man. It was really a world tour. I was you know, traveling to multiple teams every week. You know, I was rarely home. I was rarely home, and I was consistently traveling. And I went to a few teams, and when I went to Buffalo, I just had a feeling that I just belonged there. You know, the coaches, Scott McDermott, Mr. Bean, those guys made me feel at home. They made me feel welcome. And after I visited Buffalo, I went out to the West Coast. I visited San Francisco and Oakland, and it was just different vibes. And it was a good experience. It was a good free agent visit in Buffalo.
Hey, was it something that you wanted to get locked up before free agency really opened up?
Yeah, I was very adamant about getting, you know, signing my deal before free agency. But I just wanted to be the right fit, and so I was waiting, you know, to see what teams was interested. And you know, Buffalo, they seemed very interested, but when we started negotiating, you know, they came forward, and they was really. You know, they showed me that they really wanted me to be there, and that was very encouraging as well.
I know things didn't end the way you wanted them to in Indianapolis, and I remember on the conference call with the media last week, you did say you're just working on strength work now with respect to your rehab coming off groin surgery. So how much – I mean, you're a proven corner in this league. I don't think anybody's going to debate that. But how much will 2018 be somewhat of a redemption year for you?
I mean, I approach it like any other year. You know, injuries happen. That's something that's out of my control. You know, but I approach it like any other year. I'm training hard. I'm getting back. You know, healthy, and I feel good right now. You know, I just feel like, you know, I'm at a great point right now. You know, in my career as a player, I feel like I'm more mentally. You know, as a player, just improved, and I just feel like moving forward, I just feel like I can offer a lot at this point in my career, you know, to the younger guys like Trey and those guys on the back end.
Hey, did you look at the Bills? Obviously, probably everybody saw how the Bills got into the playoffs, but did you look at this as an opportunity because this organization maybe looks like it has things moving in the right direction, especially for you coming off of, you know, a couple of injuries in seasons, and then seasons really where the team just wasn't playing well at all out in Indianapolis, where you look at the Bills and you say, man, they look like they have things going in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I look at them as one of those up-and-coming teams. You know, they got young players and mixed with a bunch of, you know, proven veterans. And, I mean, it was Coach McDermott, you know, he said that he has a team of, you know, misfits, you know, guys that, you know, they came from former teams and they played well in Buffalo. And, you know, and I wanted to be in a locker room like that, guys who, you know, have a chip on their shoulder and, you know, continue that, you know, want to prove the NFL that they belong. You know, I feel like I can still, you know, I have good years left in me as a player. You know, Buffalo was the right fit because of the young guys that's, you know, that's hungry right now. And me being an older guy, you know, that's definitely, you know, motivating to be around those guys.
What kind of numbers, if at all, do you look at when you're kind of doing your homework on a team? I imagine a lot of your attention gravitates to the secondary and who might also be playing in that secondary. Are they under contract for a while? You know, that kind of stuff. But are there certain numbers that you'll take a look at to kind of get an initial reading on what the capabilities of that defensive backfield might be, whether it's passing touchdowns allowed or, you know, completion percentage allowed? I'm just curious if you dig into the numbers at all when you're trying to get a feel for a potential fit.
Yeah, most importantly, I looked at, you know, the depth chart on the defense, and, you know, I looked at the age. Most of those guys are very young, you know, in the secondary. And for them to play only 1 year together, they had a lot. They was very productive. And
yeah,
that was very encouraging to me how good, you know, these guys can be with time. Because just after 1 year, those guys had a lot of ball production. And that was really, you know, that was like the, you know, the selling point for a young secondary. And, you know, me going in my 10th year in the league, you know, that right there can rejuvenate me, I feel like.
Hey, Vontae, what do you see in Tre'Davious White on the other side? And how do you feel like you can help to improve his game?
Well, I just see, you know, a player that has all the physical tools. And, I mean, he went first round, so, you know, nobody get drafted in the first round unless they had the physical tools. And, I mean, I think he's a guy that, you know, he's still figuring it out. But I believe I can help him grow as a player as far as just the mental aspect of the game and preparing and being a professional and, you know, approaching it like it's your job. You know, the next step as far as just having a veteran presence around you that can show you how to stay in this league for a long time.
We're talking with Vontae Davis, Buffalo's newest cornerback, on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline here on the John Murphy Show. And Vontae, I know you've proven, you know, over the course of your career, you can play press man, you can play off if you need to. What's your level of exposure to a defensive system that, at the very least, is similar to what Coach McDermott likes to run here on the back end?
Well, like you said, I played everything in my career, cover three. I played, you know, press. I would say my strengths are press. I'm more of a physical side cornerback. And I like pressing, but I can play everything. And the scheme, McDermott, and, you know, Coach Frazier, defensive coordinator, you know, they do a good job of putting their cornerbacks in situation to make plays. And
mm-hmm.
I think I fit the scheme a lot for what they want, and they're asking me to do.
And then on a personal side here, Vontae, we understand you and the missus are heading off on a nice trip. Where are you guys headed?
Oh yeah, my wife. I mean, she just took the Florida bar, so she's going to be an attorney soon. So, and that process is really stressful. So I kind of want to, you know, get her away from just the books and, you know, go on a nice vacation so we can just relax, you know, before everything gets started up, like OTAs and, you know, just spend some quality time together. And we decided we're heading to Vietnam.
Oh wow. Vietnam. How long are you
halfway
guys going
around
for?
The world?
Yeah,
that's a trip.
How long?
2 weeks.
Oh, okay. Okay, 2 weeks. That's a nice trip. Hey, Vontae, I've seen you and Vernon on TV. I believe I've seen you guys on HGTV as you guys were dibbling, dabbling in some real estate, especially down there in Miami. Is that something that you're still into?
Oh, no, that was just an episode me and my brother was kidding around. You know how the reality TV shows are nowadays.
Oh, Lord.
Wow. All right.
So no real estate for you?
No real estate, no.
Wow.
Well, Okay. Listen, my wife is an attorney also, and I remember when she was preparing for the bar, so I can completely relate, because you're just walking on eggshells as the significant other.
Yeah.
Trying to hope everything goes right and you don't upset the apple cart, if you know what I'm saying. So if you need any advice, I am here, and I look forward to talking to you, because we'll probably have some stories to swap for sure. But, Vontae, listen, thanks very much for the time. Congratulations again. We look forward to seeing you here at One Bills Drive. But in the meantime, enjoy your vacation.
Thank you, guys. Good talking to you guys. Appreciate it.
All right, take care now. That's Vontae Davis, Bills cornerback, who is probably one of the first free agents to sign here in the offseason, just by virtue of the fact that he was released by the Colts last November when he made the decision to have groin surgery. And that, I'm not going to pretend to know all the ins and outs of, you know, why that irked the Colts so much. I think their doctors initially felt otherwise, that he could play through it. And he said, I'm going to shut this thing down and have groin surgery. And probably one of the reasons why was because he knew he was going to be a free agent and wanted to probably be healthy in time to play for whoever his next team was going to be, be it the Colts or somebody else, by 2018.
You know, out of all of the things that we just talked about, and he talked about in that interview, the one thing that sticks out to me is that reality TV is really not reality.
It's totally contrived.
I mean, this episode, it was he and his brother, Vernon, and they had this real estate company, and Vernon, I believe, focused on buying the real estate, and Vontae was more on the decorative side of things.
So you were going to get into that with him?
I was going to get into it. And they're like, no real estate. I mean, it's not even like, we have a company, but, you know, maybe that house that was on the episode we didn't really buy or something like
that. How long ago was that you saw that, though?
This was a couple years.
A couple years.
It was like, there's no real estate at all. I'm like, what? So for those of you who are listening, when you watch reality TV, it's false.
What they have to do is they've got to come up with a different name for reality TV, because it is anything but reality.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to come up with a word right now off the top of my head that's better. Maybe we can think of one in the break.
We'll probably get some.
Or we'll take your suggestions at John Murphy Show on Twitter. Some other title for reality television besides reality television.
Right.
Give me another name. As long as it's clean, we'll use it on the air. But I'd be interested to hear suggestions, because there's got to be something better than the word reality. I mean, every woman in the universe, I think, watches The Bachelor. I mean, you want to talk about contrived television. Holy mackerel. I mean, that's worse than a real life, a real soap opera, which is scripted and has lines and scenes and people dying and coming back from the dead. I mean, reality television like The Bachelor isn't far removed from that, is it?
No, it's not.
I mean, aside from having...
people love
They only have three
TV.
Or four wives in a soap opera. Here they have potentially 25 that they've got to whittle down. But
people love reality TV. It's amazing.
We've got to come up with a better name for it. So I'm putting Bills fans on the spot with this. Give me a better name than reality television. We should call it blank television. What should that genre of programming be called? Because we got to come up with a better name.
It should be called blank television, because you're not getting anything from it.
Well, yeah, it's rotting your brain. I know that.
Exactly.
Now I sound like my mom.
You sound like somebody's dad.
Get away from the boob tube, right? Yeah, it's not good. This is not good. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. As we talk NFL Combine, who left you impressed, either from behind the mic, on-field testing, or from reports, or even before that? Who do you got a man crush on with respect to the draft pool? And we still have to get into that quarterback conversation.
Yeah, we do.
We'll do that also coming up here in the final hour plus. And coming up at 2 o'clock, we've also got Dane Brugler from NFL Draft Scout.com. This guy is a seasoned veteran in draft circles. And I saw him out at the combine. I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but it'll be interesting to get a chance to talk to him now to get some of his observations from the combine as well. That's all coming up here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Donald Jones with you on the John Murphy Show. John Murphy Show. Did I say Don? I kind of mumbled there. Sorry about that. John Murphy Show. I don't know Don Murphy, but I don't know. Maybe he does have a show. I just know I'm not on that one. I'm on the John Murphy Show. Murph is under the weather, so hopefully he can heal up. I know he's at the doctor today, so speedy recovery to Murph, who was even struggling last week. He was fighting through something, so hopefully him and his doc have pinned it down.
Oh, yeah.
And figure that out. Get that guy a prescription. Holy cow.
I mean, he had it to the point where fans are like, Murph, they were giving suggestions.
Oh, on Twitter.
On Twitter, yeah.
Honey with tea and lemon, or tea with honey and lemon.
Yeah.
You know, that whole thing.
And then somebody said, you got to put some Vicks on your feet. And
oh, that's right. And he did that.
And that's what we.
Because we saw him the next morning. He goes, yeah, I bought some Vicks. I put it on my feet.
Oh, we went to go get some Vicks.
Oh, you made a trip with him.
I had to take, I mean, you know, we all rode together
to
the convention center. So after we got off, it was like, yeah, let's take this ride to CVS real quick.
Yeah.
So we can pick up some Vicks.
Got some Vicks on his feet, his chest. Didn't help much, though. So hopefully, you know, they go hardcore and knock whatever he's got out.
Yeah.
But 803-0550 is the number. We're talking Combine. Who left you impressed? We got a ton of news going on around the NFL. Unfortunately, this is the time where guys get clipped. This is also the time of year when guys get tagged.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like Le'Veon Bell is going to get tagged. Looks like Kyle Fuller, the corner for the Bears, is not going to get tagged, and he's going to be able to test the market. And we know where the cornerback market's going, up and up and up. Can't have too many guys that can cover. And there has been trade talk for Nick Foles. PFT is reporting that a second-round pick has been offered for the Super Bowl MVP. But it sounds like the Eagles are listening but not ready to deal just yet. I think they know the market for Foles has a very good chance to go up in the coming weeks, especially with teams that don't win the Cousins sweepstakes.
Yeah.
We have gotten some responses. In the last segment, Donald put out the ask. Well, I kind of put out the ask. Donald talked about reality TV. I said we got to get a better name for it because it's anything but reality. Just to have a little fun with this for a little bit. So continue to make your suggestions. At John Murphy Show, tweet us there. Better name for reality television. So the first guy, the snark cannon is out, went with the Donald Jones Show.
Okay.
So there's that. So right off the bat, put your helmet on, Donald. They're firing shots at you.
Okay.
Second one, just go with crap. That could work because a lot of it is bottom of the barrel type stuff.
Yep.
I don't think there's any question about that. Another person in the journalism field, Steve Brown from WGRZ, says, I like to think I work on the original reality show, The News. Okay, I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
This one, though, is my favorite. From at Strengthen SNLTLS, Jim White, that's his Twitter handle, says, Junk Food TV. Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Because I got to tell you this. There's times where I walk into the living room and I say, why are you even watching this?
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's like junk food. You know it's bad for you.
But you
watch it anyway.
Do you ever walk in and it's on and your wife is watching and, you know, or are you ever in a situation where she's like, I want to watch this. And so you're laying in bed or something. So you find yourself having to watch it. So you're like, you know what? Let me just go get some junk food so that I can watch this.
Which would make it double. Yeah, so junk food TV along with junk food.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so you're saying that's why you want to call it junk food TV? Because it drives you to junk food because you don't want to watch it.
There's a double whammy on that one.
It is a double whammy. I'll give you that. I think junk food TV is the best suggestion we've got so far. If you have something better, let us know at John Murphy Show. Because, to me, there's a lot of stuff out there that's just total garbage.
It's gross.
And I just feel the brain cells, like, melting out of my head when I sit down. My wife's into that Real Housewives of whatever city is on that season.
Yeah.
I just think it's like a guilty pleasure. I think she actually likes to see other people with more miserable existences than us. I think it It's like a feel-good thing. You know what I mean?
With more miserable existences than you.
Yeah.
So what are
and
you
I mean,
saying?
Hey, we got a, no, we got a good thing going, but I just think she, you know, she's an attorney. So she's, you know,
busy.
She almost argues for a living. So I think to see these degenerative type arguments rather than the professional ones that she, well, most times professional ones that she engages in, I think is kind of like interesting to her. She's the one that's usually doing all the arguing all day. To, maybe to see somebody else argue is, you know, a little fix. For I can't explain it. I'm never going to pretend to understand women to begin with.
I hear you.
So at least we're in the same camp there. I'm never going to. Believe me, I don't have some goal in mind that I'm going to find the key to completely understanding. But this it's so bad now that my teenage son walks into the room and he'll see that my wife's watching it and I'm just sitting along doing my own thing on my phone or whatever. And he's seen it on TV enough that he knows the names of the characters.
Yeah.
So he comes in, this is about a month ago, he comes in and he says, "Hey, how's Yolanda doing?" Because she had some kind of illness or something on the show. And my wife starts laughing, breaks out in laughter, like, "Oh my gosh, he knows the guys on the show." I'm like, "This is not good. I got to get him outside. Let's go shoot some baskets.
Yeah,
or
let's go do something.
Get away from
him." This is, and this would be my last little spiel on or story about reality TV. I know some of our fans are like, "Can we get back to football, please?"
We will.
But I was in a barbershop 3 weeks ago, back in New Jersey, and they have on. Now my son is in the barbershop, and I know it's not my, you know, it's not my place of business, but usually when I have my son in the barbershop, if they have something inappropriate on, I'm like, "Hey, man, can you turn that off, please?" They have Love & Hip Hop, which is another reality show in another city, Love & Hip Hop Miami. Now, they have actual, you know, former or even current musicians, entertainers on there from the hip hop industry and their wives or so-and-so. And so there's something, there was a date in the show. And everybody in the barbershop is arguing about what's happening on the show. And I'm talking, it was like heated arguments about this reality TV show. And I'm sitting there
laughing. So you had the real reality in the barbershop.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there laughing. And they start asking me questions. And I'm like, "I don't want anything to do with this."
Yeah,
you know,
I don't care.
My son was in the back. He's on his iPad. He's trying to listen to a movie, but everybody's arguing. So he can't hear his movie. It was just all bad.
That's not good. See, this is why reality television is poisoning America.
Yeah.
But that's enough on that. We will get back to football on the other side here because we have from NFLDraftScout.com one Dane Brugler who lives, breathes, sleeps, eats the NFL draft each and every year. And this is a guy that does his homework as well. So we will talk to him on the other side, who impressed him at the Combine. And after that, we'll take your calls, too, to see who you've got a man crush on in the 2018 draft pool. That's all coming up next here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
Here's a sports update from One Bills Drive. On-field testing finishing up today at the NFL Combine. Defensive backs, the last position group being run through both testing and position drills at Lucas Oil Stadium. Among the faster 40 times today were turned in by LSU's Dante Jackson and Ohio State's Denzel Ward. Both corners ran 4.32 40 times. In NFL news, the Pittsburgh Steelers will reportedly use the franchise tag on running back Le'Veon Bell. The two sides were trying to come to terms on a multi-year contract, but that is not going to happen prior to Tuesday's deadline to make use of the tag at 4 p.m. It's expected the two sides will take another stab at negotiating a long-term deal this spring. Defensive backs veteran Antonio Cromartie has announced his retirement after 11 seasons in the NFL, a four-time Pro Bowler. Cromartie has 31 interceptions and five returns for touchdowns in his career. The Chicago Bears and the Baltimore Ravens, two teams interested in working out a trade for Dolphins wide receiver Jarvis Landry. Dolphins gave Landry and his agent permission to seek a trade over the weekend. Miami put the non-exclusive tag on Landry a couple of weeks ago. And finally, the Sabres back in action tonight. They host the Toronto Maple Leafs. Face-off there is set for 7:30. That's your sports update from One Bills Drive. Chris Brown, Donald Jones with you here on the John Murphy Show on a Monday as we are talking NFL Combine, talking NFL free agency. There's some franchise tag news going around today, but right now we are going to sharpen our focus on the NFL Draft and the NFL Combine specifically. And here to help us with that on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline is Senior Draft Analyst from NFLDraftScout.com. It's one Dane Brugler on the line with us. Dane, thanks for joining us. How you doing?
Doing well. Good afternoon, guys.
You still in Indy at this point, I gather.
I actually left last night, so I got back here to watch the DB drills from home, and these guys put on a show. We had a lot of impressive athletic achievements over the weekend, and that was before the DBs even had a chance to go, and that was the most athletic group we had all weekend. So really impressive weekend at the Combine this year.
It's interesting that you say that about today's workout specifically, because I asked Bills GM Brandon Bean, I said, is there a position group on defense that you feel is the deepest? And because a lot of people have said, you know, interior defensive line, defensive tackle's a really good group this year, linebacker's a pretty good group this year. He said defensive back. That was his, you know, position group that he felt was the deepest. Where do you come down?
Oh, by far. I would say wide receiver, running back, you know, the skill positions are deep. But you look at corner specifically, it's just a loaded group from top to bottom. You know, Minka Fitzpatrick, whether you believe he's a safety or a corner, I play him at corner myself. He's included in that group. Denzel Ward from Ohio State, just a blazing 4.32 today in the 40-yard dash. And he also came in a little taller than expected. I think, you know, talking to scouts, coming into the combine, is he taller than 5'10", shorter than 5'10"? He came in at a hair under 5'11". So Denzel Ward, I think he cemented himself as a top 10, top 12 prospect in this draft. And then several of the other first-round caliber corners performed well. Jair Alexander from Louisville, get a lot of Joe Hayden vibe from him. I think he's squarely in the first round as long as the medicals are okay. Then some of the bigger corners really stood out. Guys like Carlton Davis from Auburn, Isaiah Oliver from Colorado. So plenty of talent this year at the corner position.
Now, you say plenty of talent. Is it as talented as people were saying last year's crop was?
Yeah, there was a ton of long corners last year.
There were. And, yeah, it's funny. More and more athletes seem to be going to corner. It's amazing the type of athlete we're getting at the position. And it just comes down to matchups. That's what the NFL is all about. And so you look at a guy like Denzel Ward, he can do everything. But then you look at a guy like Josh Jackson from Iowa, who had such a phenomenal season as a first-year starter, led the nation in passes broken up, led the nation in interceptions. He's a guy that struggled a little bit in, you know, man-to-man drills. He's more of that zone corner. You want him playing off the line. You know, let him read the quarterback, read routes, read react. I mean, that's where he is at his best, not with his back to the ball. So it just depends on the matchups and what type of corner you're looking for. But there's plenty of different types of corners in this draft. So whatever type of defense or scheme you're running, there's something to like in this group.
Now, the Bills only have right now two defensive tackles under contract on their roster. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're waiting for Kyle Williams to make a decision on whether he wants to come back and play a 13th season. And they only have five linebackers under contract. Preston Brown's a free agent. Ramon Humber's a free agent. And they've got three free agents at corner as well. But for defensive tackle and for linebacker specifically, knowing the needs that Sean McDermott likes to have in his defense, who makes sense for them? And let's just assume for now, Dane, that they stay at 21 and 22 in round one. What do you foresee as some options at defensive tackle and linebacker for them there?
Well, you'd have to think that Daron Payne from Alabama is a guy they have their eye on. You know, we know how much they want to strengthen the interior of that defensive line. And Daron Payne he's got a little Ndamukong Suh to him with his fluid athleticism for a man that size. He performed really well at the combine. I think a 4.94 in the 40-yard dash. It moved well during the mirror drills. So this is a player with, you know, there's just only so many humans on the planet with his mix of athleticism and brute power. And so I think you see his understanding of how to best use those gifts they're really starting to blossom. Over his career at Alabama, you saw him get better and better, and he was at his best in the final two games of the season in the playoffs. So you watch those two games, and you know you think he's a top 15 pick. But if he's still available at 21, 22, I think he would make a lot of sense as a plug-and-play type of guy. And then at linebacker, the two main linebackers that we've been looking at, Roquan Smith and Tremaine Edmonds, I think both will be gone somewhere in the top 15. And then the Bills have to decide, is there another linebacker worth taking in the first round? Rashawn Evans from Alabama is really interesting. Alabama obviously pumps out those guys. He got a late start, didn't start earlier in his career, but he really turned it on as a senior. He moves really well. He's at his best as a downhill player, but during drills he looked fine in reverse. And then the player to watch who could be on the rise is Leighton Vander Esch from Boise State. Yeah. A lot of fun. And my favorite part of this draft process is discovering the journey that these guys take. And with Vander Esch, he played eight-man football in Idaho in high school, the lowest classification, back-to-back state titles in football as a quarterback and linebacker, back-to-back state titles in basketball, had a walk-on at Boise State, spent the last few years developing his body, and then he starts this year as a junior and is top five in the FBS in total tackles. I think he's an ascending player, a guy that teams are really going to like, not only the measurables but the tape, and also where you project him forward. So Vander Esch, coming in, you know, a few months ago, you thought second, third round. Now it wouldn't be a surprise if we see him somewhere in the later portion of round one.
You know, his biggest thing, and Chris Brown and I were talking about it a couple segments ago, was teams wanted to know if he could go sideline to sideline in terms of lateral quickness. I think mm-hmm. he proved that at the combine. You think the same thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You watch him in the drills, his lateral speed, the range, and you see it on tape too. I mean, he does have the ability to make plays on either sideline, make plays outside the numbers. And like I said, I think you really see – the light bulb start to illuminate more and more. You know, he's seeing things quicker, and that helps speed up his pursuit speed and his range. And so the potential and upside, which, you know, two buzzwords this time of year, it's kind of hard to gauge, you know, where a player is going to, where he's going to go, where he's at. But you get excited about what he can be, not only as a rookie, but in 2-3 years.
Now, Dane, I'm going to flip it over to the offensive side of the ball and go to another position where the Bills have had some problems in the last couple of years in terms of depth, in terms of, I guess you could say, star power, a true number one wide receiver. What receivers impressed you the most and guys that could be there still on the board at 21, 22 that could be a number one wide receiver or at least a good player for the Bills?
Right. You know, in this draft at wide receiver, I mentioned it before as kind of being one of the deeper positions this year, and that's without an A.J. Green. Or, you know, we don't have a Julio Jones this year, that no-brainer top 10 pick. And the wide receiver position has kind of been strange the last 2 years on draft day. Last year we had three wide receivers going to top 10. You know, and the year before we only had one in the top 15. It's going to be interesting to see how these wide receivers come off the board. I think Calvin Ridley is the top guy. I think he's off the board somewhere in the top 20. And then my number two receiver for the past few months entering the combine has been DJ Moore from Maryland. And not only did he come in at 6 foot, which, you know, I thought he was going to be 5'10", 5'11". He was listed at 5'11 on the Maryland roster. Comes in at 6 foot, runs a 4.42. He only cemented himself as that number two wide receiver in my mind. I think he should be absolutely in consideration somewhere in the 20s. I'm not sure if he's a future number one, but you get a lot of Steve Smith vibes when you watch his tape, but I don't throw that name around lightly. If you're looking for a potential number one, a guy that you can develop into that role, two names really stand out, Cortland Sutton from SMU mm-hmm. and Equanimeous St. Brown from Notre Dame, two bigger guys who are very good athletes, guys that can help you at all three levels of the defense. And, you know, they're not number ones right now, you know, plug and play, but you like their potential and where they could be down the line.
Yeah, it's interesting because usually you have, Dane, at least three or four true burner types at the receiver position, at least, you know, that fall somewhere on the first 2 days of the draft. And, I mean, outside of, you know, DJ Chark, who ran a 4.34, there really wasn't anybody that was sub 4.4, a real blazer. What do you attribute that to? Just complete coincidence, or?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm glad you brought up DJ Chark, because he's a name that no one should be surprised if he goes in the first round because of that speed. And we saw Will Fuller a couple years ago, run a 4.32 and vault up into the first round. Teams look for explosive plays, and that's what DJ Chark can give you. And even if he's not going to be an 8-catch-a-game type of player, but if he's 3 catches for, 90 yards and a touchdown, I mean, that's what you're looking for, a guy that can stretch out the defense, help you as a punt returner. And that's why DJ Chark has absolutely a chance to sneak into that late first round. Teams are looking for speed, looking for those explosive plays. And Chark, when you give him a quarterback, which he didn't always have at LSU, and he might be able to do some things on Sundays.
We're talking to Dane Brugler, the senior draft analyst from NFLDraftScout.com, has covered the combine for years. Donald, where do you want to go here?
With regards to Chark, what's the reason you feel like he's going to sneak into this thing? With that type of speed, how come people aren't talking about him as, a top guy in this draft? What are his flaws to his game?
Well, you look at the tape, and it's an inconsistency. Only 66 catches in his career at LSU. Some of those receivers this year had over 66 catches just last season. And so with Chark, you have to remove him from that LSU offense, which had, just a highly inconsistent passing game, especially down the field, which is DJ Chark's strength. And, you put him on a different team, how would he do? You look at Chark, there's a lot of comparisons, or a lot of similarities to a Ted Ginn. He's in that mold where there'll be some inconsistencies with his route running, just with his ability to track the deep ball. Sometimes there'll be some drops, but you just can't teach that speed. And if his ability to stretch out the defense, that's going to open up underneath opportunities. He's the type of speed that defenses have the game plan for. So, that instant acceleration, it helps him compensate for some rounded routes, wasted steps, and he's a player that you expect to get better with his route running and some of the details of the position. So with DJ Chark, he's a guy that, at LSU they had that number 7. He has lived up to it. I think he really has a chance to live up to it in the NFL. Patrick Peterson, Leonard Fournette, DJ Chark could be that next guy.
We're talking with Dane Brugler, senior draft analyst for NFLDraftScout.com. I know there's a ton of draft sites out there, but this one is probably one of the more comprehensive you will find out there, just from a player-by-player, prospect-by-prospect standpoint. These guys really do a lot of homework on these guys and watch all the tape. But, Dane, with respect to offensive line, I know they're saying it's a good year for interior O-linemen this year. Billy Price is a guy that's been mocked to the Bills by more than one draftnik in this pre-draft process, but he partially tears his pectoral muscle during the bench press this week. How much do you see that impacting his draft stock at all? Because I think a lot of people saw him as a plug-and-play pivot guy, and now, he's saying he's going to be ready by training camp because it was only a partial tear, but where do you see his stock going in light of this?
It's TBD right now because we have to find out, is it going to require surgery? That seems like the worst case. And if that's the case, then it's probably a 4-month rehab. Billy's going to get some second and third opinions to figure out if it just needs some rest. Is it best to just take care of the surgery now? And so once we find that out, that'll give us a better idea. So I think teams are kind of just taking a wait-and-see approach. But, I agree with you. He is a player that you thought would be a plug-and-play. He started 55 games at Ohio State. No other player in that program's storied history started that many games. And he did it at center. He did it at right guard. He did it at left guard. He had at least 14 starts at each of those positions. So the pedigree, the resume, the durability, all there. It's just more of a unfortunate circumstance for him at the combine. To me, he's the second center in this class. James Daniels from Iowa, to me, is the top center. Love what he can do. But both these guys are considered late round one players.
Now, with respect to offensive line, and especially interior offensive linemen, what are some other names out there? I don't know if the Bills will go high in the draft in terms of line play, but most would say they probably need some depth. They're a little bit old at that position. So maybe second, third round, some linemen that could come off the board in that area.
Yeah, I mentioned the top two centers, James Daniels from Iowa, Billy Price from Ohio State, and then the third center doesn't get enough ink for as good as he was in the SEC. Frank Ragnow from Arkansas played both center and right guard for the Hogs. He checked boxes, the size, the movement skills, the length, the power. He might not be elite in any of those categories, but he's good enough where you can put him out there, start him. The mental makeup is what you want for the pro game. He has leadership to him. There's so much to like about Frank Ragnow and how he projects. Again, might not be elite in any of those areas, but you feel good that he can at least give you starting reps where you can plug him in and not worry about the position, provide that instant depth as a rookie. And then at guard, we know the top guys, Quentin Nelson, Isaiah Wynn, Will Hernandez, three first-round picks. After that, on day two, two guys really stand out to me, Braden Smith from Auburn and Austin Corbett from Nevada. Braden Smith at Auburn, if you watch Kerryon Johnson, when they needed a big run from him, they were running behind right guard, number 71, Braden Smith. And then Austin Corbett from Nevada played left tackle, former walk-on, played almost every game the last 4 years there. He's going to transition inside to a guard. And I think he's another guy that you project as being a plug and play. So for the teams that don't get the Quentin Nelson, Isaiah Wynn, Will Hernandez in round one, Braden Smith, Austin Corbett, those are your plan B options on day two.
Last one we've got for you, Dane, is it's hard not to be impressed by what Shaquem Griffin did at the combine, especially when you consider the fact that he was a late invite on the heels of what he did at the Senior Bowl. And I was down at the Senior Bowl watching him in practice, and it's just hard not to be impressed as to how he's been able to adapt, whether it's disengaging from blocks and getting to the ball or whatever it is with just one, usable hand. I mean, he's got one hand. So how much, realistically, because I think a lot of people saw him as athletic enough to play in the league, but I think a lot of people were of the opinion that GMs were going to get hung up on the fact that he's got a disability, even though he doesn't call it that. So how much has this body of work in the pre-draft process helped to elevate his stock? Where could you see him going now? Can he creep into late day two or no?
I think it's possible. And I think coming into the combine, fourth, fifth round was what you expected. This is a player who, the first line of my scouting report is runs like the wind. I mean, he's so fast. And what's so special about his speed is it's sustained from start to finish of a game. You watch the AAC championship game against Memphis in overtime. He was still, you look at across the field, several of those players are gassed because they're playing a physical, fast game for all four quarters. But then in overtime, it was Griffin's speed that was the difference. So his conditioning is really outstanding. I don't think anybody expected a 4.38 40-yard dash at 227 pounds. But it just shows how he just continues to whatever challenge is in his way, he's going to overcome it. And I think with him, we have to remember that he didn't lose his hand 2 years ago because of a car accident. He hasn't had his hand since he was 4 years old, so it's all he knows. It's all he knows how to play football, and so he's able to compensate for that. And I think having a twin older brother who doesn't have a limitation, doesn't have a disability, that's really pushed him throughout his career to keep up with his older brother, who's now with the Seahawks. So with Shaquem Griffin, he's probably not going to be an every-down player in the NFL, but he should be a speed demon on special teams and then also be a sub-package linebacker. You could bring in as a rusher. He can drop in space. He can just do a little bit of everything. And for some teams, that might be a need that you can address on the third round. But I think at worst, we're talking about a fourth, fifth-round player.
All right, Dane, listen, thanks very much for the time and the expertise. We appreciate it. NFLDraftScout.com, that's where you can find Dane's work all throughout this pre-draft process and even beyond after the draft is over. Dane, thanks for the time.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Dane Brugler, senior draft analyst at NFLDraftScout.com. I mean, I go to that site pretty religiously, especially when I've got some prospect that I am just not familiar with. I will go there right away because Dane, along with Rob Rang, who also works on that site, those two guys bust it out. I mean, they watch a ton of tape. They were at all the pre-draft events. I mean, I saw them both down at the Senior Bowl. They were both there at the Combine this week. Sometimes if they're close enough, they'll even shoot out to a couple of pro days.
Yeah.
I think they're both located in the Midwest, so they get a lot of get to a lot of those Midwest pro days as well and give updates and reports on that too. So just a really comprehensive draft site if you're interested in really diving in deep.
Mm-hmm.
These guys do an excellent job with the draft. 803-0550 is the number where you can get on board if there's somebody that impressed you in the combine. I think it's time to start talking about these quarterbacks. We've been talking about it for an hour and never really got to it.
We've been saying we were going to?
Right, that's what I meant. But the two guys that really had the personality questions that had to be answered are Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Baker Mayfield had to convince people that he's not cocky, he's just confident. There's an edge to him. And Josh Rosen had to convince people that he was passionate about the game and teammates can gravitate to him. I listened to both of their press conferences at the Combine last week.
Yeah, I remember when you came back over from.
I think both of them checked the boxes. For the 15-minute, and again, we're not sitting with them in a 15-minute formal interview when they're really on the spot.
Right.
But they were both asked some challenging questions. The interesting thing is how different the two of them are as people. Because Mayfield is the walk-on who had to transfer from Texas Tech, you know, then fight to get a job at Oklahoma, had a coaching change, and still succeeded through all of that to the point where he won the Heisman Trophy. And then you've got Josh Rosen, who has had arm talent for days
mm-hmm.
and has pretty much been like the golden boy since he was about eight or nine. And the difference between them on the field is night and day. Baker Mayfield is the super rah-rah guy. You know exactly how pumped up he is about making a big play when he makes one. He's headbutting offensive linemen after plays. You can tell how into the game he is just by his body language.
Mm-hmm.
Where Josh Rosen is that cool, calm, collected customer, always seemingly even-keeled with whatever is going on, and just has a calm presence about him no matter what the situation in the game might be. And so these guys were peppered with questions left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Mayfield demonstrated the edge that he has because somebody's like, well, you really want to go get drafted by the Browns? And his answer is, I'm the guy that can turn the Browns around.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, so we're leading off with that answer. That was the first question. I was like, here we go. So there's just an inner confidence in him that just does not quit. And I could totally see how people be like, wow, this guy's kind of an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is he being so, you know what I mean, so controversial or so pompous almost? But it's not that. It's just there's this deep inner confidence in him. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Flutie when he used to get questioned about what he was capable of and not capable of. And he's like, look,
were you comparing size and everything in that?
Yeah, well, I think there are some of the same things. They were battling some of the same things. I mean, he's barely 6 feet tall.
Sounds like a complex you're trying to point out here.
Well, I'm not a big guy either, so I can relate. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm 5'7 in shoes. So, you know, I can kind of relate to being underestimated based on size. I mean, that – It gets frustrating when you hear it over and over and over and over, especially when you've put up the kind of production that he has over a long period of time. I mean, he made no secret about it. I'm the most accurate quarterback in this draft. He is.
Mm-hmm.
Even on deep balls, he's the most accurate guy in the draft. For me, Rosen, I think, answered every question great. I mean, he had a much different take on leadership than Baker Mayfield did. Mayfield was talking about how teammates follow me. Ask anybody at Oklahoma, my teammates jump on board with me. I lead men. And it's hard to deny that.
Right.
I mean, but I thought Rosen had a very good answer for the same question, which is the biggest one he's being questioned on. Can this guy be a leader of men? And his take on leadership was, leadership is about relationships first. And he believes you have to build relationships one individual at a time because everybody's different. And there might be a player on my team that responds to a kick in the pants. There may be another guy on my team that responds to some inspirational line that I could give him. And there may be a third guy that, you know, might need something else. So I just thought his answer was smart because it was different, and I think it's accurate. I think that is how he operates. He said it flat out. I'm not a rah-rah guy.
Yeah.
You're not going to see me running down the field after a 60-yard touchdown pass pumping my fist, you know?
I think in terms of Baker Mayfield, for me, I like the edge that he plays with.
Well, I think most NFL fans love seeing that out of their quarterback.
Yeah. He kind of reminds me of like a Phillip Rivers on the field. I'm not even talking about style of play.
More fiery than that.
Yeah, he might be more fiery than Phillip Rivers. But you hear, like, we had Lorenzo on, and we talked to Lorenzo about, I think this is the week they were going to go out to LA and play against the Chargers. And he talked about, he played against Phillip Rivers and he's fiery and all of that stuff. And sometimes it could get under your skin. Other times, it's just like whatever, you're a little punk quarterback. But I think Baker Mayfield plays with that type of I want to say chip on the shoulder or style on the field. He talks trash, and that's just what it is. Now he has backed it up to this point in his career. He has played very well, accurate, throwing the ball, made a lot of plays, and obviously won the Heisman Trophy. In terms of do guys follow him? Yeah. But at the same time, you need to really put a mixture of what Rosen said and Baker Mayfield, because relationships are important in this league, and especially from your quarterback. Guys want to know, you can lead us, but don't just come yelling at me, rah, rah, rah. I might not be that rah, rah guy. You know, I don't really care if you're yelling. I truly don't. So if you want to talk to me and you want me to get pumped up, then we can talk aside from the whole rah-rah stuff. And that's what Rosen is saying. And so if you could combine the two of those guys, and I'm talking height and everything, with some of that passion from Mayfield, the arm talent from Rosen, then you have the perfect quarterback.
But those are probably the two most accurate quarterbacks in this draft.
Oh, yeah.
Those two guys.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question about that. So if accuracy counts, and it's usually the number one thing, and decision-making is a quick second.
Yeah.
Those two guys are probably the two best in this draft class at those two things, accuracy and decision-making. And I think a lot of their numbers back that up. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the quarterbacks and maybe a little bit of true and false, Donald. We'll be rifling through some interesting issues in the true and false category on the other side of the break. John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Donald Jones with you on the John Murphy Show, churning our way to the end of the program here in Hour 3. 803-0550 to join us if you wish. Your combine crush from this past week, feel free at 803-0550. But it is time now, Donald, for a little true and false. And we begin with true or false question number one. Should the Browns take Saquon Barkley number one overall? That is the latest buzz coming from Indy, that the Browns are going to take Saquon Barkley number one and then probably take Baker Mayfield at four. That is the latest report on NFL.com.
Should the Browns take Saquon Barkley number one? I'm going to go true. And the reason I'm going to go true is because Saquon Barkley, to me, is the best player in this draft. And I don't think that you should – I think – having a running back like Saquon Barkley, if he plays like he did in college, whoever you draft to play quarterback, that will help that
quarterback. Oh, it's a ton easier.
Right, exactly.
Because now you got eight guys in the box. That means reading defenses is easier.
Right.
The whole ball of wax.
Exactly. So I think you take him, and then if Mayfield is your guy, whomever is there at number four you need to take that guy at number four. But if you pass up on Saquon Barkley, he's not going to be there at number four. It's just not going to happen.
I would agree.
Yeah.
So if you like him that much and you're the Browns, you better darn well take him there. So I will say true as well, because he looks like the biggest can't-miss prospect in the draft. Now, here's the thing in my head. This is the warped way that I think sometimes. I'm watching Saquon Barkley. I'm looking at all these things that he's doing. I look at his position. I look at his school. And the first thing I think of, Kijana Carter.
Yep.
1995 draft. Second overall pick to the Cincinnati Bengals. Or was he first?
He was first, wasn't he? Was he the last first overall pick. Yeah.
And he won the Heisman.
Went to Penn State,
say.
Right?
Yes.
Right.
Went to Penn State as well. So he blew out his knee his first year, came back, wasn't the same. And then I think he hurt himself again. And his career was very short in the NFL, maybe 4 or 5 years tops.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a higher risk position than quarterback in terms of injury, mm-hmm. certainly in terms of longevity.
It's 100%. Risk.
He is special, but so is Adrian Peterson. He went 7th.
Yeah.
And he's had a magnificent career, including one NFL MVP.
Right. I would say the biggest – now, I don't remember exactly the knock on Adrian Peterson's game that year when he was coming out, but I know he never really developed into a pass catcher out of the backfield. And
this
that's
is
the
true.
One thing that
but,
Saquon
yeah.
Barkley can do.
And then there was another Penn State running back who went 5 overall, who had some of the best contact balance I have ever seen in my life in a running back, and his career went off the rails, too, due to injury. Can you remember that guy? He was after Kijana Carter.
No.
Curtis Enos.
Definitely not.
5th overall. Yeah. You want to know why you don't remember him? Because he only lasted about 4 or 5 years in the league. 5th overall and didn't make it. So there is, I don't think it's as bad as maybe the Madden curse.
Yeah.
But yeah. I worry. Running backs, Penn State. I mean, the last guy that had a really good career in the league, Kurt Warner probably. Not the Kurt Warner you're
yeah,
thinking
not
of.
The running back.
The one
I mean,
who spelled it with a C.
Right.
It was a running back for the Seahawks.
You know, I think with any
you
running back.
You should factor any of that in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like urban myth kind of stuff, but still, I think about it.
It's still the running back position itself. Not even those guys that came from that school, anything like that. It's the running back position itself. And this is why teams are okay with drafting other positions early and going with the running backs in the 3rd, 4th, 5th. You know, even yeah. sometimes undrafted, because those guys, the shelf life isn't that long.
Right. But what's blinding GM, not blinding GMs, but what's enlightening maybe GMs into thinking about taking a running back this high is what has happened in recent years, whether you're talking about Zeke Elliott going 4 mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and vaulting that team into true contender status. What, they go 13-3 his rookie year
yep,
with
yep.
Prescott at quarterback too? And then who's the other running back that just went high?
Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, Fournette last year. Jaguars go to the AFC title game. And I'm not saying if the Browns take him, that's what the Browns are doing. I think
yeah.
there still might be a little ways off. But if they're that much closer, you know, if they're above 500 after adding him and, you know, they things work out at quarterback, you know, then you're saying it's only going to gain more traction.
I think the biggest reason why Ezekiel Elliott was successful and Leonard Fournette had a good season – and those guys are still very young and still have some time to go, and Ezekiel Elliott has to stay on the field. I think that both of those guys went into systems that had or teams that had good offensive lines. Ezekiel Elliott's offensive line was just ridiculous that year.
Yeah,
and
best
so,
in the league by
yeah,
far.
And so when you coupled that with him in the backfield and Dak Prescott, teams didn't know who.
Well, and you also
really,
had Dez Bryant outside, you had
right.
Jason Witten at tight end.
So you look at all of those weapons, and it's like, man, he was running through holes, that was like running through that door
yeah.
out there going into our control room. And the Jaguars' offensive line was pretty good this year for Leonard Fournette.
It was.
Now, they gave him the ball a million
wasn't
times.
It wasn't great, but it was okay.
Yeah, it was okay. Now, the Browns, you have to ask, that offensive line, if they
Joe
draft
Thomas
him first.
And a bunch of guys.
Right. So if you draft him first, you better have a good quarterback who can – I mean, they like Josh Gordon. They need some other receivers.
And by the way, Joe Thomas isn't a lock to come
right,
back.
Right, to come back. And so you need to ease the pain and the hits on Saquon Barkley with a passing game. And so you need to have a solid quarterback, some solid wide receivers, because I don't know how good their offensive line is. And it's not like – I mean, they probably would do this and hand him the ball 25, 30 times a game. But I don't know if that's the smart play, because then he's not going to last that long.
All right, number 2 for true false. Dolphins should draft a quarterback in the first round. This is a story that has been gaining more and more traction. Now, Adam Gase at the Combine this past week said Ryan Tannehill is our quarterback. But this is a guy who's 30 years old, has never – I mean, they went to the playoffs in 16, but it wasn't with him at quarterback. He got hurt halfway through the year, and Matt Moore carried him the rest of the way. And I think the clock is ticking here on Tannehill. Gase still wants to hitch his wagon to him, and I guess that's commendable that he's sticking by his guy. But there's an owner there in Stephen Ross that says, let's get this show on the road here.
Yeah.
We need to be contenders. I need to be in the playoffs. And he's got an aging defense.
Yep.
So, and a lot of money tied up in that defense, by the way, too, in Wake and Sue alone.
What?
So, you know, you've got a situation here where people are speculating at 11 that if someone like Mayfield's on the board, they would take him. Maybe they take one of the other guys if they slip down that far.
Do they
maybe
trade
does Lamar Jackson come into play there as an athlete that can make some plays for them? Dolphins draft a quarterback in the first round, true or false, with pick number 11?
I'll go true on that one. I can't believe that they're totally sold on Ryan Tannehill. You know, he's played some good games, but he's just recently gotten hurt, was out. And I don't know if they're sold on him long-term as the face of that franchise. So, yeah, I'll go true on that one. I think that could definitely be in play in them taking a quarterback. But at that point, do they trade their current quarterback?
Well, yeah, but what are you getting for him? I mean, you'd have to because you bring the new kid in. It's just going to be way awkward.
Yeah.
I believe.
Are you getting a fourth for Tannehill?
If you're fortunate enough to. I mean, a guy coming off an ACL.
Yeah.
I think you'd be pretty lucky. I am going to say true, and this is for the only reason I'm saying it is I think the owner is going to weigh in here with a heavy hand, and he's going to tell Tannenbaum, if the guy is there that they like, we're taking the quarterback. End of story.
Gotcha.
Taking the quarterback. I think the owner comes in. I think Stephen Ross starts throwing his weight around this year. He's tired of waiting. I think he steps in that draft room and says, take the quarterback. That's it.
Yeah.
I think he does it. I mean, maybe they move back and get somebody at a better spot. Like, let's say Mayfield's off the board and they liked him. Rosen's gone. Darnold's gone. Do they like Allen enough? I don't think he's all that different from Tannehill.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, you know. I don't know if they'd be sold on him. And then in that case, I could see them sliding back.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, you got to think about here is Landry's not going to be there. They've got an underachieving receiving core beyond Landry. Aging tight ends. Fasano's a free agent. Nobody really to speak of there. Their defense is getting old. What would a quarterback be walking into there? I don't think it would be a ready-made situation. They need some more offensive line reinforcements. And, well, yeah. I mean, I like the running back that they have. Kenyon Drake, I think, can be a pretty good player. Yeah, he's a dangerous player. I like him. So that's the one – I think that's the one thing you
the
do
one
have.
One thing they do have is a running back.
But beyond that, there's a lot of holes on that offensive side of the ball, especially if you move Landry, although it would be interesting to see what you get back. I don't know if you want a quarterback, a rookie quarterback, walking into that situation right now. Maybe they go get somebody in free agency. But for now, I'll say Stephen Ross swings his weight around and drafts a quarterback. Last one. Smart move for Giants to move Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie to safety. True or false? He's moving to safety. That's,
yeah,
that is happening.
Moving to safety. I go true on that one. It's a smart move because the guy has played corner, so you know he has the coverage ability. The speed is still there for him. He's always been one of the faster corners in the game. I've played against him a couple times. He has the height of a safety. I mean, you really – yeah, I think it's smart for them to move him to safety. If you feel like you have corners that can actually play on the outside, yeah.
Yeah, I will say true also. We've seen this transition work for a lot of players in the league as they get to the backside of their career.
Yep.
I mean, you can run down the list. Troy Vincent, Rod Woodson, Charles Woodson. I mean, Hall of Fame guys that have made that transition. So I will say true as well.
But is it strong or free? He's not going to be in the box.
I'd probably have him in center field.
Yeah, in center field. But then in center field, you're the one that has to command the defense, the back end of that defense. And you're looking at things differently, you know. And so
it'll be an adjustment.
Yeah.
So let's see if he's got the football acumen to handle a completely different viewpoint. That is true and false here on the John Murphy Show. One more segment for Donald and I coming up on the other side of this break here. See if we have time to take a phone call, perhaps. But otherwise, we will wrap things up for this Monday edition of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Brought to you by Advanced Alarm, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. First up, Vontae Davis, the newest cornerback for the Buffalo Bills, joined us on the show on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline and explained to us why he chose Buffalo.
Yeah, you said it best, man. It was really a world tour. I was you know, traveling to multiple teams. Every week, you know, I was rarely home. I was rarely home, and I was consistently traveling. And I went to a few teams, and when I went to Buffalo, I just had a feeling that I just belonged there. You know, the coaches, Scott McDermott, Mr. Bean, those guys made me feel at home. They made me feel welcome. And after I visited Buffalo, I went out to the West Coast. I visited San Francisco and Oakland. And it was just different vibes, and it was a good experience, a free agent visit in Buffalo.
As long as Vontae calls him Coach McDermott, he'll be fine. We also spoke with senior NFL draft analyst from NFLDraftScout.com, Dane Brugler, about a player at the combine who maybe impressed more than anyone else, the Central Florida prospect, linebacker Shaquem Griffin, who has only one hand after having his left hand amputated at age 4 due to a congenital defect. Here's Dane Brugler on Shaquem Griffin in the week he had.
We have to remember that he didn't lose his hand, you know, 2 years ago because of a car accident. He hasn't had his hand since he was 4 years old. So it's all he knows. It's all he knows how to play football. And so he's able to compensate for that. And I think having a twin older brother who, you know, doesn't have a limitation, doesn't have a disability, that's really pushed him throughout his career to, you know, keep up with his older brother who's now with the Seahawks. So with Shaquem Griffin, he's probably not going to be an every down player in the NFL, but he should be a speed demon on special teams and then also be a sub package linebacker. You could bring in as a rusher. He can drop in space. He can just do a little bit of everything. And for some player, for some team, that might be a need that you could address on the third round. But I think at worst, we're talking about a fourth, fifth round player.
So that is what have we learned. And Donald, we've got a couple of NFL news and notes here just breaking in the last 25 minutes or so. NFL.com's Tom Pelissero says Jimmy Graham of the Seahawks expected to part ways, and he's going to maybe try to talk to the Saints about a possible reunion. What do you have?
I have Chris Mortensen actually tweeted out, the Eagles have fielded, not solicited, more than one inquiry and offer for Nick Foles. Eagles' basic answer is it's going to take more than the first and fourth round picks they got from Vikings for Sam Bradford. Foles is Super Bowl MVP and best insurance policy in the NFL. And he went on to tweet after that, which underscores the organizational sentiment that Foles is too valuable with the team that expects to contend for Super Bowl again with their franchise quarterback coming off of an LCL repair.
Good posturing, Howie Roseman.
Yeah.
That's why he's a Super Bowl GM.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a lot to get Nick Foles, an awful lot, even in a quarterback market that's going to have options. But I still think the Cousins shoe drops first.
Oh, yeah.
And then the bidding war begins for Nick Foles. What are they going to get? It'll be interesting to see. That is the Monday edition of the John Murphy Show. Donald will be back Tuesday. Hopefully, Murph will be as well. Our thanks to all the people behind the scenes, Jay Harris, George Blass, J.J. Torito, Kelly Root, and Tom Hollander, and Jeff Koltenek. Thanks to those folks behind the scenes. Back on Tuesday for the next edition of the John Murphy Show here on Buffalo Bills Radio.